because I'm sure it didn't used to be like that. In the aftermath of that attack in Golders Green, you would have thought that there would be unanimous praise and admiration for the police officers who apprehended the suspect. And the more you learn about the circumstances in which that was undertaken, the more admiration, praise and gratitude you think would be forthcoming. And I honestly think that if you had told me at Wednesday lunchtime that they would, that the officers involved would come in for some quite high-profile criticism, I don't think I would have believed you. But it might be deserved.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner has told LBC officers are dealing with a pandemic of anti-Semitism in the UK. A man has been charged with attempted murder this morning after two Jewish men were attacked in Golders Green on Wednesday. Sir Mark Rowley has said we've seen a rise in attacks recently, but the issue has been building for years.
The sustained series of arsons we've seen, and then this horrific attack on Wednesday night, awful for the victims and their families. It's very much targeted at Jewish communities. I think we have to recognise that what police are dealing with and what we're trying to protect communities against, we're dealing with the symptoms of a disease, of a pandemic perhaps, of anti-Semitism.
The UK's terror threat level was raised from substantial to severe yesterday. Essa Suleiman, who's 45, will appear at Westminster Magistrates Court later. The Housing Secretary says he's calling time on rogue landlords as the new Renters' Rights Act comes in. Steve Reed says the updated rules will give renters the security and dignity they deserve. It's being described as the biggest shake-up to renting for more than 30 years and marks the end of no-fault evictions. Emily rents a property in Devon and has recently been subject to one.
In the long term, it might help renters and their rights have a bit more security, so they can't just be told to leave their house for no reason. So hopefully in the long run, it'll be positive. But at the minute, yeah, it's not great.
You can read the Housing Secretary's exclusive piece on the LBC app. A think tank is calling for the triple lock pension to be replaced with a system which allows people to access cash earlier in life. The Tony Blair Institute says the current scheme is outdated and increasingly unaffordable. It's arguing for a new lifespan fund to be established instead. And Britney Spears has been charged with driving under the influence in Southern California. She was stopped by police in March. Her lawyers are likely to appear in court for her on Monday. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 61 points at 10,316. The pound buys $1.36 and a euro 16. LBC weather, warm and sunny across the UK this morning. A few showers moving eastwards later and a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Get that Euro Millions feeling with Friday's £34 million jackpot. Plus, 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. Friday's Euro Millions jackpot is £34 million. And 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10, so at risk of sounding pompous, let me rephrase that, at risk of sounding unintentionally pompous, I see our programme, the programme that we make together every day, I see it in part, and only in a very small way, as pushing back against some of the dominant and very dishonest narratives. Wherever you choose to begin, whether it's in the obvious place, 10 years ago, almost to the day, or whether it is in less obvious positions, my personal discovery that the industry I had dreamt of joining since being in short trousers was riven with sycophancy, moral corruption, and shills. But I'd see our role, or not our role, that's too pompous even for me. I'd see our programme, and it is our programme, as pushing back a little bit against the very dominant narratives that our media is dominated by, because the people that own our media want it to be dominated by those narratives. So just a quick and very recent example, there is going to be a shift from attacking migrants to attacking welfare claimants, people on benefits, including sickness and disability benefits. There was a hideous story in the news yesterday. I didn't get around to sharing with you about an increase in the abuse being directed at people using bona fide users of blue badges to denote a disability when they park their vehicle. Because the same people that sold you Brexit and racism are now selling you the idea that everybody who has got a blue badge in the back of their car is either a fraudster or a liar or both. So those are the things that we push back against. Those are examples of things that we push back against. So when the Daily Mail started describing the Green Party as the green menace, And posting regularly on any story looking at the Green Party and looking at its leader, Zach Polanski, with a specially designed little, what would you call it, graphic? A specially designed little graphic. Beware the green menace, and green menace is in green. with a sort of weird effect on it, as if someone has been scratching at the words with their fingernails. Beware the green menace. You feel, or I find myself feeling, that, well, that's something we should be keeping an eye on. That is something that probably gets filed under the elements of discourse that we see ourselves pushing back against. You know, give them a chance, give them an even break. And I intend to. I'm just sharing all of this with you because I want you, for what it's worth, for the people who care about such things, I want you to have a full understanding of the context of the question that I am about to ask you. So I've been watching the rise of the Green Party and the by-election success in Gorton and Denton and the media savviness, I think I would say, of the leader, Zach Polanski, and the attempt by some members of this profession to either minimise, demonise or denigrate him, a little bit too much focus on his previous career as a hypnotist, when he made some slightly questionable claims, I think it's fair to say. But I don't know why you would focus on that more than you would focus on other things that don't involve sort of hatred, discrimination, racism, anti-Semitism from people's past. So I've got a watching brief. I have concerns, I suppose I have hopes and concerns about all new political faces and new political movements that don't appear to be part of the continent's lurch towards the far right. Okay? I just want to get that out there. I really want to get that established. Okay? Because when the chief of the Metropolitan Police slaps down a politician, I also find my natural impulses leaning in ways that are kind of, well, I'd normally worry, particularly if it's a politician from the left, because you somewhat lazily, and this is a little bit undergraduate, I don't apologise for that, I'm being completely honest with you. I kind of find myself thinking, oh, you've got an authoritarian police officer swinging at a left-leaning politician. That rarely ends well. But I like Mark Rowley. I mean, you can sue me for that if you want. I like his style. I really don't like his refusal to use the word institutional when describing the racism that every single report and inquiry into the Metropolitan Police Service has established, and proof of which is provided, it sometimes feels, on an almost daily basis. And yet, I think he has got it entirely right today. I can't quite believe that anybody, let alone somebody who is currently enjoying at some time in the political sun, would choose to share or indulge in criticism of the officers that apprehended the 45 year-old man who has now been charged with attempted murder after the Golders Green attack. A simple matter of fact that means we can and will say no more about it. We will say no more about it. Because of rather obvious legal reasons. And I mean no more about it, so we don't need to refer back to that at all. We refer entirely to the head of the Metropolitan Police Service choosing a relatively rare tactic of sending a strongly worded public letter to a party leader, a leader of a party that is polling very, very well at the moment, describing a casual disregard for the incredibly challenging and dangerous work police officers do to protect the public. And because it's Mark Rowley, I find myself thinking this is not part of the attempts to demonise and denigrate Zach Polanski for the crime of not being a politician determined to do the bidding of the kind of people that own the Daily Mail or fund the lobby groups on Tofton Street that laughingly describe themselves as think tanks. So do you understand why I've gone to the trouble of explaining this, do you? I hope you do, because I am conscious of dishonest denigration being underway. And I don't want to let my opposition to dishonest denigration blunt my own objectivity or my own political powers, such as they are, of political scrutiny. I want to be able to say this is a really big mistake without worrying that I've been brainwashed or misled into that by the wider media denigration, by this ludicrous beware the green menace in a newspaper that told you Liz Truss was going to be a genius, and beware the green menace. And so all that sounds very calm and thoughtful, right? So you might be surprised to learn that when I read what he had done, I was bloody furious. I have a weird... All that I've said about the racism in the Met, I stand by. They are, a profoundly imperfect service. I'm a middle-aged white man, so I am unlikely ever to really be on the sharp end of the most unpleasant veins of thought and behaviour that run through the Metropolitan Police. But I also have, and I make no apology for this, I discovered it during a round of industrial action taken by the fire service shortly after I got this job, going back, a long, long time now. And I sat there watching newspaper coverage and marvelling. It was just, I was right on the cusp of my old life and my new life. My old life when all I wanted to be was a newspaper person, like my late father. And the dawning realisation, A, that I wasn't very good at it, and B, that I wasn't... I wasn't as enamoured of that industry as I thought I was going to be. I was very lucky. I got to work for a newspaper that was a sort of short-lived experimentation in liberal populism, and I did very well. I say I wasn't very good at it. I was show business editor of a national newspaper by the time I was 28. But when that came around, what am I going to do next? Am I going to move on to the editorial floor? Am I going to, become an executive who's not writing? Or am I going to try and become a columnist? I sort of found that I didn't really want to. And so I moved into this industry. Very luckily, I was 80% luck, and it turned out I could do it. I could do a job. And I watched some of the people I used to work with. This was a huge moment for me. It was a life-changing moment. I watched some of the people I used to work with attack firefighters. And I couldn't believe what I was reading or watching. I don't think it would be appropriate to name them. Most of them have been long forgotten now, to be honest. But they were queuing up people that I'd broken bread with, people to whose homes I had been for dinner, people who I had shared pints with in the pub and banter with in the office, and people who I'd done paper reviews with on the telly when I used to still do those largely thankless exercises in turning up in Austerlitz at 1:30 in the morning to have a look at the next day's front pages. So I knew these people well, and I considered them to be friends. And I started reading their columns about how the firefighters were taking the mickey and the firefighters were all a bunch of unionised clowns and how they all had second jobs in Ibiza. And I'd never really clocked before because I was a showbiz journalist. I wasn't a political journalist. You offered me the chance when I was in my mid-20s to follow Norman Lamont around or Norman Cook. I was going to choose Norman Cook every time, all day long. It's this blooming job that's radicalised me. And I couldn't believe it. And it was when I first discovered a real sense of moral outrage at the industry I had always wanted to be part of. I found myself thinking, how can you be joining attacks on the men and women who run into our own homes while we are running out of them? How can you possibly be attacked? And listen, nobody's perfect, and like any other profession, like any other group of human beings, there will be bad people in it and good people in it. But of course, unless you're a refugee or an immigrant in this country, nobody really thinks that you as a good person should be punished for the actions of a bad person. But as a generality, the emergency services are a force for immense good, and the fire service and the police are the bravest of them. It's no criticism of paramedics, but you do not routinely, I know you do find yourselves in hideous circumstances, but you do routinely run towards danger. That is what you do. I am disappointed, writes Mark Rowley, because it is this kind of inaccurate and misinformed commentary that is contributing to the rising tensions we are seeing in society and undermines officer confidence to act. This after the leader of the Green Party shared a post on X. I wonder whether you could make a case for telling politicians to get off X. Probably not, sadly. Someone would have to lead, wouldn't they? That claimed that the two policemen were violently kicking a mentally ill man in the head. Which, I suppose, and we can say very, very little about that case, is possibly technically true. But when Sir Mark Rowley describes apprehending violent and dangerous criminals as a full contact and messy task, which may appear shocking to observers with little experience of policing in the real world, your decision to criticise these officers, using your public profile and reach, will have a chilling effect. I said to you yesterday, because I'd only read this cursorily, I said to you yesterday that they were fearful, possibly, of it being a suicide attack. And that is why, when the suspect refused to show his hands, they resorted to very serious actions. And I think that's almost unbelievably brave. I mean, I really do. This is where the emotion kicked in, both anger and admiration. What would you do in those circumstances? Two police officers. I actually don't know what happens. Does the adrenaline take over? Were they terrified? Do they hit a zone? Do they move into a sort of space that the rest of us rarely or never experience? They are apprehending a man who they believe has stabbed two people and who is clearly in a Jewish area of London and who therefore may well be a terrorist. This is what's going through their minds in that moment. They knew he had, or they believed he had a weapon, at least. And they, I think, are entitled to do whatever the hell they want to do in order to make sure that they get him under control as quickly and as safely for everybody present as possible. So, how bad is this? So this is the first time Zach Polanski has been asked, really, to flex the power of his newfound status. It's the first massive public moment that party leaders, and yesterday I was criticising the other ones. I was criticising the ones that turned up in order to try and make some political capital, including the one whose own school contemporaries remember him insisting that Hitler was right and that the Jews should be gassed, but there's never been a bandwagon that Nigel Farage won't jump on, regardless of how hypocritical or deceitful the activity may be. So yesterday I was criticising other politicians for their behaviour. So it's not in any way a partisan. I don't need to tell you that. You know that. I guess I'm just second-guessing what people will pretend to believe. So people making political capital of it from one side of the divide came in for my criticism yesterday. Today, I'm wondering whether what he's done is worse. Mark Rowley got booed in Golders Green yesterday. I think that was unfortunate as well. But I'm not telling people in Golders Green how to conduct themselves. Or was it the day before, perhaps? Forgive me. I'm not telling people in Golders Green how to conduct themselves or how to get their emotions under control at a time like this. Perish the thought. I am entitled to both think and say that that was an unfortunate intervention. But they have just witnessed a horror in the midst of their community. Zach Polanski hasn't. He is Jewish. Let me be absolutely clear about that. And his name, he changed his name in order to reflect his Jewish heritage, which I think his parents or his grandparents had jettisoned in order to avoid anti-Semitism. So, that, you know, that is an act of courage and an act of anti-Semitism, if that's even a thing. Well, of course it is. We're all anti-Semitism. But I think this is awful. And I want to know whether you do. Also, maybe you need to know a little bit more about police. Right, maybe you need to be a police officer to really dig into the weeds of this bit of Mark Rowley's comments. Your decision to criticise these officers using your public profile and reach will have a chilling effect. Will it? Will it? I mean, I said to you, didn't I, a minute ago, Wednesday lunchtime, I would have said to you, the only thing we can say with any certainty here is that the police officers are going to get medals and everybody is going to applaud them and admire them. And here we are, 2 days later, completely wrong. So, how big a misstep is this for Zach Polanski who do you agree with? How much do you agree, if at all, with Sir Mark Rowley? And how accurate is it to cast the impact of what the Green Party leader has done far beyond this moment, and to say that he has actually had a chilling effect, his decision has had a chilling effect on policing itself. I really want to know what you think about this, because I've tied myself in a bit of a knot, and I'd quite like to untie it. I almost want your permission to be furious with him. But I'm holding back from being furious with him because I don't want to become part of the process of demonisation and denigration that the rest of the media is up to. But that's his fault, not my fault, that he's done this thing. I think it's really, really bad. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need, simply to tell me how big a misstep this is, if at all, and how much you agree or disagree with Sir Mark Rowley, whose words I will play you immediately after this.
LBC.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
My house. Tip
weight
is...
Weight loss?
I... No, forget that.
You just
happens.
Keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 23 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm probably tie myself in too many knots, because you can simply say, you know, denigrating and demonising a politician from the left is awful and par for the course, and they're bound to do it. But that this particular politician from the left has made a really, really crass error in joining in criticism of the police who apprehended the suspect in the Golders Green attacks. But how big an error is it? Let's just have a quick listen to Mark Rowley talking about it to Nick Ferrari earlier this morning.
I'm not interested in politics, but if somebody eminent rather than some of the oddballs on social media, if someone eminent says something or does something which I see has a risk to undermining the confidence of my officers to act, because they need that sense of public support, then I need to intervene on that, and that's what I did with that letter. Can you imagine being in that situation without a firearm? It is the most extraordinary bit of policing, and I need officers to see that they are going to get my support and public support for that. And that's interesting, the correspondence with Zach Polansky, that the support it's received online from the wider community is really heartwarming for officers to see.
Is Mr. Polansky being ignorant, rabble-rousing? What's he doing?
So that's for others to talk about that. I'm just dealing with the confidence of my officers to protect the public.
So there's the sort of technical and operational element of this as well, which you will need experiences that I have never had to comment on. But there's also the sort of moral and political angle too. So a lot to get through. Let's start in Dudley. Nick's there. Nick, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. I've told you before, I've had my head turned by the Green Party in the last 6-9 months or so. But I think that Polansky has dropped an absolute clanger here. My concerns with the Green Party remain around what they would do on the economy and what they would do on security. And sure. I think that latter point is linking into this now. I mean, first of all, who'd be a police officer now? Who would join up and say, yeah, I'm going to carry a taser or even go into firearms, when the scrutiny that you get after discharging them is the level it is now, where you cannot be seen to do right from wrong? I don't know what people want to have been done differently by the police, if truth be told, in that instance.
But if you watch the footage, you could arrive at the conclusion that the guy had already been successfully subdued. And you know, this is the age of social media, and that they didn't need to go any further. And we can't, you know, endorse going further, even as we would struggle to determine or define exactly what going further is. But I can see why some people watched the footage and felt profoundly jarred. I was profoundly jarred watching a flipping shoplifter get apprehended in Chiswick, Marks and Spencers the other day. So violence, unless you're inured to it, violence will always affect people. But if you're ever going to want it, let alone excuse it, it would be in a moment like this.
I agree. I don't think the police have done a fat lot wrong from what I have seen. But I think Zach Polansky's problem is he is looking 50 years down the line in some woolly world where we've got all these social interventions which reduce crime. And that's great. But he was on his podcast a week or so ago. We had two ladies on who were talking about basically how you can probably reduce 80% of prison people if you'd intervened early enough in society.
Which is true,
in theory. Which is true, and in principle, I don't have an issue with that. The problem is that is not going to happen 2 days after an election with Polansky as PM, or even 5 years down the line. This is a long-term strategy.
So we're talking about
he's done is undermined. What he has done is undermining the police in the current world and the current reality, which is going to be the case. Let's say there's an election tomorrow and the Greens have a majority and they're the government.
You're frightening the life out of me, man, because you know we're in Purdah for the council elections next week. You're playing a blinder. You're walking the tightrope. But you're not doing anything wrong. I'm just nervous. But I'm reminding you as well, because we can't go anywhere near that, because it's me that gets into trouble. You'll be fine. You'll be off to Dudley Zoo. I'll be the one getting hauled over the coals by Ofcom. So no, I hear you. It's not an unfortunate misstep for you. It's rather more significant than that, because you're already extrapolating from it to much broader observations, much broader political conclusions.
Correct.
Right,
I'm thinking what the long term is with this and what they would be looking to implement.
Well, this is a course, and I'm glad that you said from the outset that you were generally warm towards him and indeed them, because people who fear them electorally will, of course, be making points similar to yours for potentially or perhaps rather different reasons. So you have the Home Office Minister, Mike Tapp, saying that he was disgusted and claiming that the Green Party had hit a new low. A Labour MP, David Taylor, saying Zach Polansky's sympathy for a marauding anti-Semitic terrorist rather than his victim shows why his Green Party is dangerous. But he then adds something that could have come out of my mouth a moment ago. How can anyone watch that video from Golders Green and not feel proud of the way those brave police officers wrestled with the attacker who would not let go of his knife? I wonder whether it is, as Nick suggests, evidence of something more broadly troubling. And we are responding to something he has done. So, listen, by all means, if you've got nothing better to do this morning than to resurrect the ghost of Jeremy Corbyn and claim that Zach Polanski is being demonised and denigrated in the same way, then just have a little look at what the head of the Met is saying and why, and ask yourself what you would say to the police officers that he chose to attack in the immediate aftermath of their successful apprehending of a profoundly dangerous suspect. What would you say to the police officers? I've only got four messages mentioning Jeremy Corbyn, but, I, you know, it's like Banquo's ghost, isn't it? What would you say to the police officers? Oh, yes, no, it's nothing to do with you being attacked by him. This is all about him being attacked by them. I don't get that position, but I acknowledge its existence. Coming up to 10:30, Met Police Chief accuses senior politician of spouting misinformed rhetoric about officers who strike the rest of us as heroes. I just want your response to this moment, actually, from whatever perspective. 0345 6060 973. Lottie Morley has your headlines.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has told LBC officers are dealing with a pandemic of anti-Semitism. A man is due in court charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were attacked in Golders Green on Wednesday. The Housing Secretary says he's calling time on rogue landlords as the new Renters' Rights Act comes in. Steve Reed says the updated rules will give renters the security and dignity they deserve. You can read his exclusive piece on the LBC app. And Donald Trump has agreed to scrap tariffs on Scottish whiskey following the King and Queen state visits. The King has now travelled on to Bermuda after their four-day trip to the US ended yesterday. LBC weather, warm and sunny across the UK with a few showers moving eastwards later, a high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep on going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota Electrified Saving. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from $299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep. Where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
You know what you're getting with a conference. Laptop backpacks. Security pass lanyard.
If you could just pop this on.
Being asked, how was your journey in?
How was your journey in?
An array of triangular sandwiches.
Mm.
Having to deal with a small crisis back at the office. Sometimes in life, you just know what you're getting. Like a great night's sleep and a tasty breakfast. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern. This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060 973.
It is 32 minutes after 10. I suppose Nick and Dudley kicking this question a little further than I had managed to, despite spending an awful lot of time talking, me, not him, which is whether or not this is evidence of a broader problem. And my jury is still out on that, but I do feel Zach Polanski, the leader of the Green Party, has behaved absolutely appallingly in joining in criticism of the police officers responsible for apprehending the suspect in the Golders Green attacks. And listen, if you find any of my language questionable, it's for legal reasons, all right? I do occasionally get a text that isn't unhinged, questioning, querying, rather than attacking some of the words that I choose to use for legal reasons when cases are still live. 10:33 is the time. Theo is in Islington. Theo, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Good morning. So before I became a journalist, I served for 7 years within the Metropolitan Police.
Okay.
And this kind of thing from Mr. Polanski does absolutely have a chilling effect. And I've got to say to Sir Mark Rowley, this is a bit of a breath of fresh air. And it is good to see the commissioner publicly, loudly, and really sticking his head over the parapet to defend these officers, which is not something that my former colleagues and I certainly felt we've had much of before.
I'm just letting that settle, actually. I'm not going to push back against that. I can't, you know, walk in your shoes or their shoes, but feeling supported from the top is one of the absolutely finest things that anybody in any job can enjoy. What about this question of undermining or the chilling effect for the future? Would you go that far?
I would. Oh. Yeah, and I saw this, you know, anecdotally in first person when a significant event happens. I saw my colleague say, "Well, I'm just not going to risk that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stop that vehicle, even if it's a bit suspicious. I'm not going to get involved above and beyond." And man, those officers absolutely went above and beyond.
Mm.
A knife-wielding suspect in that manner requires, by the, you know, SOPs, of course, reality gets in the way, an armed intervention.
And the suggestion that he had already been satisfactorily subdued by the taser, which is coming from a lot of armchair experts.
Mm. No, absolutely not the case. A taser is an effective tool, however, does not always work, and it turns off. Once the muscle release goes, that person may be a bit dazed, but he still has the knife in his hand, and those officers are still fighting for their lives. You can get slightly nicked with a knife,
yeah,
and suffer a serious, serious injury. The inside of the leg, the wrist, the arm, the neck, any of those areas can lead to your death.
So, I mean, support from not necessarily within the ranks anymore, but I imagine that your views, your thoughts would be echoed by pretty much everybody who is. So then I nudge you towards the second element of today's question, which is how big a misstep is this, given that it's very, very hard for honest people to get a clear bead on Zach Polanski because dishonest people in the media are so busy distorting that lens?
Well, it feeds that narrative.
Well,
that
that's
being
part of the problem,
told about
isn't it?
The Green Party, isn't it?
Yes, it does. But set all of the narrative aside, focus exclusively on this issue. And one of his first big tests as a major political player on the national stage. How big a misstep is this for you personally?
For me personally, it's a very significant misstep.
Okay,
and I sit on the centre left. I'd say so. The Greens are a little bit far for me.
Sure.
But it confirms some of my fears about the Green Party. And I think that I don't want to speculate too much about what Mr. Polanski, you know, why he did it. But it seems to me like a bit of a knee-jerk, oh, I agree with that, I'll retweet it.
Yeah. And then there's a lack of thoughtfulness there, which, of course, social media absolutely incubates, but which you have to do better once you achieve a certain status or once you're undertaking a certain role. I think, listen, there's absolutely no reason why there has to be a consensus on this question, but I think that if you're going to disagree with Theo or with me, then you need to have your ducks in a row, that's all, isn't it? Steve's in Peterborough. Steve, what made you pick up the phone?
Morning, James. Just a little bit of context. I suppose politically, I don't support the Green Party, but I've certainly been interested in some of the recent activity by the Green Party, but probably more significantly for this conversation, I spent 20 years in the Met Police. I was a tactical firearms commander, so led a number of firearms operations. And I just don't understand why, in the context of that situation, Zach thought that the best thing that he could do in that scenario was to try and criticise the police officers who ran into danger.
Mm.
Even if, as you said, on the face of it, you look at that video and you might be inclined to think, oh, have they gone a bit far? Is that a bit over the top? Which I completely disagree with. I think actually what they did was entirely in keeping with the sort of force that's needed to subdue someone who's let's be honest, only got murder on their mind.
But even
if you were inclined to think that actually maybe that needs a look at, like, how is, I don't understand how in that particular situation, the leader of a political party thought that the best thing they could do would be to try and criticise the police.
That's brilliantly put, actually, because that is you're turning it into a judgment question, and you are, well, I mean, it was already a judgment question, but it's a conscious thing. The best defence he's got, really, is that he did it without thinking, which is bad enough, because his job is to think. But that's it,
and then ultimately what he's admitting to then is that he's just trying to appeal to people's base instincts, i.e., if you are someone who doesn't like the police, who is inclined to be mistrusting of organisations like the police, then they will read that and they will immediately sort of be aligned with you. Well, actually, in situations like this, what you need is people to step back, be objective, and try and look at the evidence.
And
he must have people around him who know how policing works and what situations like that entail when it comes to the use of reasonable force and even just common sense. You've got someone with a knife who's trying to kill people who is then failing to comply with your commands, who, let's be honest, we don't know what else may have been happening in relation to stuff that he may have had on his body. And that's, you know, it's, with hindsight, these things are easy, but those officers are running into danger not knowing what they are facing or what is about to happen. And all they're trying to do is neutralise that threat. And the reality is, if armed police had turned up first, I think he would have likely probably been shot.
Yes, well, I mean, I'm not pushing back against you with 20 years in precisely the job that would have been turning up armed. So a few people have made that point already, but none are going to make it as powerfully as you. And I mean, the other element of knee-jerk, and the best defence, and I'll acknowledge this throughout, is that he wasn't thinking straight and he did it in a fit of, emotion. But in that case, I think a very swift withdrawal and apology would be the order of the day. And with every ticking minute, that becomes A, less likely to happen, and B, less effective if and when it does happen. So it also, and this opens the door to criticism that will be both fair and unfair, depending on who's making it and why, it also opens the door to criticism that he has, in the absolute moment of terror, expressed more sympathy for the perpetrator than for victims.
Yeah, and that's how you say, that's why I think it's tone deaf from him. And I think actually, if he came out and apologised very quickly,
yes,
then maybe I fear that this potentially might be a fatal error he's made.
You've been politically, actually, I think Mark, of course.
I think Mark Rowley actually was entirely right to come out in defence of those officers.
Yes, I'm not surprised. And as Theo said earlier, a former member of the Met, it isn't always the case that the headman or woman feel that they can or should or could display such obvious and explicit solidarity. But goodness me, I can't really account for it any more than Steve can as to what would go through your head at the moment like that. We've all posted stupid things on social media, sometimes accidentally, of course. One of our callers yesterday was still very angry, understandably, on one level, with Gary Lineker for something he accidentally posted quite a while ago now. So it happens. But actually, Gary's quite a good example of what you do when you have done something without noticing what you were doing, which I don't think Polanski can claim, or without properly thinking through what you have done, which is his defence. But in Lineker's case, it was absolute unawareness of the graphic in the corner of the screen of the message he was sharing. So you can simply say, I don't know what, I just can't believe I did it. And of course, if you're defending him, you can say, he's only a retweet, it's only a share, anyone can do that. But if he doesn't apologise, he undermines your defence of him, I think, in many ways. 03456060973 is the number that you need. 10:43 is the time. Derek is in Doncaster. Derek, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, mate.
I don't want to talk about following two police officers talking. I don't really want to talk about the incident other than the police officers involved would have been very aware of the limitations of what they could and couldn't do. And
yes.
They didn't know if someone else was going to jump in, but was associated with him. So
that's also true. That's also true.
Yeah, you don't know. You're only focusing on the man on the ground. There might have been an accomplice there that could have been coming in or whatever. I don't know. So from their point of view, they absolutely did the right thing. They neutralised it as quickly as they possibly did. Talking about Zach Polanski, I think part of it is he's been around, what, a year now? And everyone's who likes what he's sort of proposing quietly in admiration of him. And to be fair, the only way the media have been trying to trip him up is about some hypnotist job that he had about 10 years ago.
Which I think is gibberish, or close to gibberish. I mean, it happened. Don't get me wrong, it happened. But the idea that I'm supposed to care more about that than I do about Nigel Farage marching around Dulwich College shouting "Gas the Jews," according to people that were there with him, is just laughable.
And that's exactly it. So I think if you like me, you listen to him and you admire him, this is the first time he's properly messed up. He didn't do it consciously. It was probably a retweet that he just sent out on the spur of the moment. But
then you just say so. Then you just say so.
Yeah. He needs to own it. He needs to step up, say, look, I messed up, I'm really sorry, whatever it is. That the problem is everyone's been itching for him to trip up like this, and they will be all over it.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that those of us who haven't been itching for him to trip up can ignore it or pretend that he hasn't tripped up, because that way Corbyn 2.0 lies.
Yeah, and this is the point where he shows leadership and ownership and sorts it out. But I think... Yeah, I understand your anger, but I think there's also an element of disappointment in him.
Yes.
But I think we need to realise, you know what, he's gone a long while without tripping up majorly. And
hopefully he'll get back on an even keel as quickly as possible in the broader interest of democracy. But you'll have to wait and see whether or not he decides to just hope that this one goes away, or whether or not he decides to acknowledge error or admit error. But if he doesn't think he's made an error, then it would be, I don't know, it becomes even trickier to insist that he does. Of course, reposting inflammatory and misleading social media in the midst of a live crime situation, or in the midst of a hideous crime situation, is something that Nigel Farage wrote the book about. I suppose we should be grateful that Polanski's intervention in this case didn't actually cause any pogroms or race riots. It's 10:45.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
So you get the ridiculous situation of 20-somethings wandering around central London calling on the Houthis to hit another cargo tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. And when you ask them, well, who are this group that you are telling supporting in their targeting of these ships that are making their way through the Strait of Hormuz, you've got no idea. No surprise leads to an atmosphere in which the people who are being hit by your words have to hide themselves away.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Add some sizzle to your bank holiday with Lidl on our range of deluxe hot dogs and burgers. Now 20% off with Lidl Plus. Tender, juicy and almost a little too moorish. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 6/5/26.
You've packed enough suitcases to know quality when you see it. Well, Saga Travel Insurance has been named a Which Best Buy. And now get 20% off when you buy before the 11th of June. Search Saga Travel Insurance for a quote today. New policies only. Standard and Plus are Which Best Buys May 2025. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
3, 2, sun.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on, with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and after protected. T's and C's apply.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
McDonald's breakfast is turning up the heat with a spicy new twist. Calm down, not that spicy. Breakfast is for savouring, not suffering. Introducing McDonald's breakfast with Frank's Red Hot Ketchup. A spicy breakfast, suitable for the morning. Until 8th of June, served until 11 a.m, subject to availability.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker, just say, play LBC.
10:49 is the time. The head of the Metropolitan Police takes the rare step of publicly and explicitly criticising a senior politician. And I think it's fairly clear that most, if not pretty much many people, think that Mark Rowley has got this completely right and that Zach Polanski has dropped something of a clanger by expressing concern for how the suspect was being treated by the police who apprehended him after the Golders Green attacks on Wednesday, 10:49. John's in Wembley. John, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
I kind of see where Zach Polanski was coming from.
Okay.
And let me explain.
Of course.
In 2016, there was a well-known footballer that played for Aston Villa called Dalian Atkinson.
Yes.
And he had a mental episode. The police attended and subdued him and everything, tasered him and everything, and he died of a cardiac arrest. The policeman that was involved in that arrest kicked him in the head.
He did.
And
he's in jail. He's in jail now for 8 years. Benjamin Monk, I think, his name. Yeah.
Now,
go on.
As I said to you when I phoned up, I said, look, fine, investigate it. Investigate what happened in Golders Green. Not a problem. But there's a case. There's not
a precedent, mate.
Why not? Tell me, James. Why?
Because nobody thought that Dalian Atkinson might be a suicide bomber or saw that he was carrying a knife.
Well, all due respect, James, yesterday I didn't believe he was a suicide bomber.
Well, that's not the point, is it? The police officers have to behave as if he might be. How do you know he wasn't?
Well, that's my point.
I'm not going to have an argument with you. This is silly. Nobody thought that Dalian Atkinson was not carrying a knife, and there was no evidence that he had harmed anybody else. I think he'd broken a window in his father's front door. He was under the impression that he was the Messiah. All of the evidence that was presented in court painted a picture of someone who needed care and concern, not a picture of someone suspected of stabbing two people and quite possibly being in the middle of a continuing terror attack. So what happened to Dalian Atkinson? This is silly now. Sorry,
John. No, it's not silly, James.
It is, John, because
I'm
not saying you're silly.
Kicking him in the head.
Yeah, but they're completely different circumstances, in which case one mode of...
Different circumstances. So a kick in the head is different.
Yes, of course it is, if it's somebody you think...
James.
John.
Mate.
What?
You don't know what a kick in the head is a kick in the head.
No, it's not. If someone's carrying a knife, you are allowed to treat them differently from someone who is not carrying a knife. Surely you understand that.
Oh, James.
What?
I see all this. Right, this is another thing. Let me just finish on this.
No, let me just clarify that you do understand that the police...
No, no, no.
You have to.
I understand. I'm not stupid, James.
Well, I'm not saying you are stupid. I'm saying that you're being a bit silly. So if you're carrying a knife, you can expect much more heavy-handed treatment from a police officer, should you refuse to give up that knife, than you can if you are not carrying a knife. Full stop, John.
James, let me tell you something. Personally, if someone is carrying a knife or not, and I'm in an altercation with them, things are going to happen, okay? That's for me personally.
Right.
But I'm saying to you, James,
if you
look across the pond, any police officer in America that has kicked, punched or whatever, they've been dismissed. Obviously, we've got a different attitude towards it.
They really haven't. You can shoot people as a police officer. I mean, look at the ICE agents. They shot someone in the face in Minneapolis just 2 months ago and they didn't get fired.
I'm focusing on kicking in the head and punching.
All right.
Okay?
So you're going to get fired for kicking someone in the head, but not for shooting someone in the face.
Oh, James, yeah, but I'm
John, I don't know. I think we're on slightly different planets this morning.
Kicking in the head, James.
We're on slightly different planets this morning, and I look forward to meeting you again on the same one. And it may well be. In a parallel universe, that you are completely right. But if you're comparing the horrible treatment of Dalian Atkinson, who hadn't committed any crime, wasn't suspected of having recently stabbed two people, was not by any stretch of the imagination embarked upon a terror attack that was far from over, was not posing a serious threat to absolutely everybody in the vicinity. If you think there's a policing parallel to be drawn between him and someone who was all of those things, I can't really see much point in going anywhere else with this conversation except to say take care and have a lovely weekend. It's 10:54. Chris is in Haywards Heath. Chris, what do you think?
Hi there, James. I'm a first time caller, so be gentle, please.
Of course I will. I'm gentle with everybody, as I just proved, actually.
So I spent 31 years in the Met,
right?
And I did 8 years with Sussex Police. But one of my jobs in the Met was I used to train police officers in use of force and self-defence training.
So you're in your comfort zone when you're looking at footage like this, professionally speaking. No one enjoys it.
Well, particularly in the sense that I was one of the country's leading subject matter experts in use of force.
Okay.
So I would go to, for example, maybe a coroner's inquest, a criminal court or a discipline board advising around police officers' use of force. And my main point here is the body-worn camera footage is brilliant, but what it doesn't do is it doesn't contextualise the thought process and the fears and what is going through the officer's mind when they deal with what they're dealing with. For example, what other information they have. And clearly that will all come out in due course, but that is something that people need to take into account. It's all very well and good looking at body-worn camera footage, but it's what's going through the officer's minds at the time. And the other thing I would say is, whenever I gave evidence at any form of inquest or court case, I would always say, training never replicates what goes through an officer's mind, the fears,
for sure,
when they're actually dealing with an incident alive. You can never replicate it at all.
Not even close, I don't imagine. You can do a million days of training, you can prepare for incidents like this for an entire career, but until you're smack in the middle of it, you've got absolutely no idea what you're going to do or how or what is going to happen. Let me nudge you, if I may, then, towards the commissioner's intervention and the talk of a chilling effect that for Polanski to have decided in that moment to criticize the officers or to join in with criticism of the officers. Do you think that Mark Rowley is getting a little bit carried away when he describes it having a chilling effect more broadly?
Well, I think there's quite a difference between police officers of my era and police officers of the modern era.
Okay.
It's far more difficult to be a police officer now than when I was a police officer, because you've got mobile phones,
it's CCTV. A lot more scrutiny. Now, that is largely, in my opinion, a good thing.
Yeah, it is, but I think Mark Rowley coming out and supporting the officers in this instance is exactly what's needed, because otherwise what will happen is police officers will become fearful of dealing with things. And let me turn this on its head slightly. Imagine if the officers had turned up and not been not used that, what I think is an appropriate level of force, and the suspect had got up, stabbed one of them, and then gone on to stab another member of the public. What would be the criticism there?
I think we can answer that question quite easily, and it's a brilliantly rhetorical question that you pose. Thank you, Chris. The subject matter's too serious for Ray Liotis today, but it is notable once again how many people are kind enough to call in from positions of real professional expertise and experience. 10:57 is the time. Steve's in Godstone. Steve, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, good morning, James. First of all, I totally agree with your last caller, and I totally disagree with the one before that. And I admire your diplomacy for calling that one silly. And I'm not sure what planet he's on either. I served for 30 years. I was in the Met for 30 years. And as soon as I saw that footage the other day, my friends and colleagues that I served with almost collectively said, let's just wait for the complaint to come in.
Gosh.
And that was, you know, you're looking at, like, officers that all served 30 years.
I mean, a little bit of cynicism involved, but there's a difference between the complaint coming in from, I think Rowley himself described them as the sort of usual clowns on social media, not his words, yeah. mine, and yeah. the leader of a you know, an increasingly serious political party.
Sure, absolutely. And I'm really disappointed in Zach Polanski. And the question I would ask is, what was the point of it?
Yeah.
I don't really understand what the point is. But we were always, when I did my 30, we were always under the impression that there wasn't a huge amount of support. So I absolutely doffed my cap to Mark Rowley on this occasion.
Mm.
And I think someone mentioned him putting his head above the parapet. And I just say good on him. Because I think the police now, as the last caller said, they're very different now to when I joined in 93. And you were kind of allowed to do your job, and by criticising them, I don't really know.
This is where John in Wembley actually was helpful, because you need to have higher levels of scrutiny than were in place generation mm-hmm. ago, because of people like Benjamin Monk who unlawfully killed Dalian Atkinson, and you don't want a culture of cover-up any more than you want a culture of fear caused by excessive scrutiny. We're never going to get it perfectly right, but on this occasion, I think that, and you think, and almost everybody contacting the programme thinks that the police did get it right. I've been struck, and forgive me for this, because I probably shouldn't have been surprised by it, I've been struck by the way in which all officers, serving and former, have shared a sort of sense of unhappiness with what leadership would normally do in these circumstances. That the idea that Rowley has moved, you know, before any investigations or any inquiries, he's moved to show solidarity with his officers in a way that I sense sort of cheers your ex-copper's heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And when the footage came out, I was really surprised. And that was another sort of, that was what was happening on the sort of chat groups and stuff. Yeah. I think it's the first time that the footage has ever been released that quickly.
Right.
And there was a reason for that, I think. And that reason is to show that those officers were acting in a situation that no normal member of the public has ever been in. And with your last caller, with regards to those kind of like the use of force, the people that criticise and the people that are, you know, maybe Zach Polanski, for example, has maybe never even been close to a fight or an armed suspect or a dangerous situation. So to criticise someone that's trying to do the right thing at the time, if the officer had been armed, if he'd been fully armed and he was acting on because we all act on the information that we have at the time, if they thought he was a suicide bomber or was wearing a vest, he would have been shot dead, probably.
And that would have been the case in many other countries as well. Or if there had been armed police present on the scene or nearby, or they'd arrived first, then I think you're absolutely right. We'd be having a very, very different conversation. Thank you, Steve. I read a couple of messages just for not balance necessarily, but diversity of view. This is from Alex, who writes, I could give a flying fig about the person charged for the crimes, but you guys are so scared of a proper left-leaning person coming along and upsetting the right-wing apple cart and making society a fairer place that I can almost smell the skid marks, she writes. And I think, respectfully, a lot more pertinent and sensible, this from Orbelix. Consider that black people might see this differently. Black people have suffered at the hands of these officers of 30 years plus in ways that white people have not. 2 minutes after 11 is the time.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner has said 300 extra officers are needed in London to tackle growing anti-Semitism. A man is due in court charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green on Wednesday. Sir Mark Rowley told LBC, we are facing a pandemic in the UK after a rise in attacks on Jewish sites.
What police are dealing with and what we're trying to protect communities against, we're dealing with the symptoms of a pandemic, perhaps, of anti-Semitism, which has been building over many years.
The UK's terror threat level has been raised from substantial to severe. Chris Phillips is a former head of the National Counter-Terrorism Office.
We shouldn't be changing what we do. We should just be aware, listen, there is a raised terrorism threat. If you were told that there was a lot of burglars in the area where you live, and they specifically liked red houses and you had a red house, you would probably make sure your locks were working, you'd make sure your security cameras were on.
The housing secretary says new rules will give renters the security and dignity they deserve. Steve Reed says the new Renters' Rights Act, which comes into force today, will also call time on rogue landlords. Chris Norris from the National Residential Landlords Association has told LBC not everyone is pleased with the changes.
We are concerned about how some of the elements of this act will play out, and landlords are very worried, frankly, that although there's been a lot of effort put into getting this act into force, there doesn't seem to have been quite as much effort put into making sure that the courts and the local authorities and the tribunals, all of which are essential to supporting these reforms, are actually fit for purpose as well. So I think there's a lot of concern about that area.
You can read the Housing Secretary's exclusive piece on the LBC app. The White House says the war in Iran has effectively come to an end. Donald Trump is facing a deadline to halt the conflict or get approval from Congress to continue with his military operation. The US blockade of Iranian ports in the Strait of Hormuz is still in place. And 10 people arrested as part of a probe into alleged sexual abuse and modern slavery in Crewe have been released on bail. More than 500 officers took part in raids earlier this week after an investigation into the Ahmadi religion of peace and light. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 59 points at 10,319. The pound buys $1.36 and a euro 16. LBC weather, warm and sunny across the UK with a few showers moving eastwards later, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's Newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Some people still don't know that you can collect nectar points at Esso.
Are they not in this hot spring?
No. And please put on some trunks.
What about in the library?
Shh. No, at Esso. Forget hot springs and libraries. The nectar points are at Esso. Every time you fill.
What about the planet Zog?
No, not there. Esso, where the nectar's at. See esso.co.uk for details.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Another element of the aftermath of Wednesday's attacks is the increasing call for marches in support of Palestinian people to be curtailed or to be stopped. They got called hate marches very, very early on, which is unhelpful, isn't it? Because it creates the idea that everybody on that march is engaging in hatred, and it was obviously anti-Semitic hatred that was being alluded to. It's categorically false to claim that everybody who has marched in support of Palestinian people or against genocide in Gaza, as it sort of became latterly, is either anti-Semitic or expressing hatred of anybody. And yet that landed. It landed really early in certain quarters, some quite surprising quarters. And I mentioned that if you're not if you're happy with that depiction, then you're obviously happy with maligning completely people completely innocent of the charge that you're levelling at them, while levelling it at others. And these, for me, seem to be at the heart of so many problems in society at the moment. I misspoke earlier, didn't I? When I said that it's only if you're a refugee or an immigrant to this country that you're going to be held responsible for the actions of complete strangers with whom you have got absolutely nothing to do. Obviously, if you're on a march in support of Palestine, you are also going to be held accountable for complete strangers who you have never met and have absolutely nothing to do with. But by calling you a hate marcher, you are being punished for their alleged actions or for their activities, or for the activities of the people that we are aware of. I can think of two women who were photographed with images of paragliders on their knapsacks or on their placards, which is just hideous. It's objectively hideous and clearly a celebration of the October the 7th terror attack in a fairly obvious and hideous way. They throw the book at people like that. People who chant globalise the intifada are not all calling for attacks on Jewish people anywhere in the world or everywhere in the world. But some people who use that phrase seem to be. So it becomes an anti-Semitic phrase. And for me, the sensible, decent thing to do is to disassociate yourself from phrases that have been corrupted or polluted or that don't have as much nuance as you might have thought that they had. But you can still go on the march. You just need to perhaps moderate some of your language or your placards. What we don't have is any really clear idea of how much of this movement is made up of people who are culpable or questionable when it comes to anti-Semitism or hatred. I'd be really uncomfortable levelling an accusation at 1,000 people if, for example, only 10 of them were guilty of that accusation. In fact, I wonder what number you'd stop feeling bad about. So here are 1,000 people that you are maligning as racist or anti-Semitic or perverted, or whatever it is. There's 1,000 people in a crowd over there, and you're calling 10 of you're calling them all racist because you know or you think that 10 of them are. That feels wrong to me. What if it's 20? Is it okay now? Okay, it's 100. 10% of that crowd over there are wrong-uns. Do you malign the entire crowd? Do you stop the 900 people from marching because the 100 are culpable or questionable? 100 out of 1,000. Is that enough? 200? Hey, 501, I think it's pretty close to a slam dunk, right? If it's a plurality of people embarked upon a process, then there is a reason to curtail that process. There is a reason to censor that speech. But the evidence needs to be absolutely incontrovertible, surely. Otherwise, not only do you have a freedom of speech problem going on, although it's unlikely to be complained about by the people who dedicate their lives to pretending that they care about freedom of speech. And the other thing it might do is turn up the temperature of anti-Semitism, as a Jewish caller suggested yesterday, that you actually end up putting another burden on the shoulders of British Jews by allowing others to claim that they're responsible for the censorship or for the cessation of these marches. So it's a mess, and I'm not sure it's helpful to anybody to have it front and centre in the immediate aftermath of the attacks in Golders Green. For example, do we think that the suspect went on any of these marches? We have absolutely no idea. Seems unlikely. So why are we talking about marches in the context of, do we think that he had his head turned by people carrying solidarity with Palestine placards through central London? It's not impossible. But, of course, you can have your head turned by anything. It's not necessarily it's not the fault of the person carrying the placard if you have gone off on something of a mental tangent as a consequence of witnessing it. But it's far from likely, let alone plausible, that that is what happened at all. And you know, people have marched through London in the last 12 months. I think they've got another one planned, who are celebrating pogroms and racism and calling for people to be treated in an appalling fashion. So what do we need to know before we can say with any confidence that these marches are a problem? Nothing for many people in my profession. We don't need to know anything. Or we need to see some pictures on social media that have been disseminated incredibly widely, and that represent a proportion of a crowd that I have absolutely no interest in registering or counting. Like those hideous people marching around with the paraglider images on their right. So if that was commonplace, this is my theory, right? But I'm fairly confident in my theory. If that was a commonplace behaviour, if that was widespread behaviour, we would know about it. The journalistic effort and the activist effort put into watching these marches is rightly high. And evidence of activity like that, I think, would be quickly found and widely disseminated. So how do we know? How on earth do you arrive at the conclusion that it is a hate march without knowing for a fact that a significant number, if not a majority of people on there, are not there because of their concerns about Israeli activity in Gaza and beyond, but are there because they have a historical hatred of all Jews? It's such an unfortunate descent into the diminution of language that we have seen. You're calling someone anti-Semitic for describing events in Gaza as a genocide. What words are left to describe somebody undertaking targeted attacks on Jewish people in Golders Green? What words are left? You call it a hate march because people are expressing horror and sadness at the killing of innocents. What words are left to describe people who actually hate other innocent people? You call it a hate march. You, I think, are in danger of doing more harm than good. And some of the people doing that will be coming from, in their own minds, a good place. But you need to know. I'll call it a hate march if you can show me that they are massively, massively undertaken by what I'm going to somewhat inadequately describe as wrong'uns. As wrong'uns. 14 minutes after 11 is the time. So I think I want to talk to people who've gone on them. A problem that I have, and I do mean people who have gone on them. Because if I am on a WhatsApp group that shares footage of bad people on these marches, that is all I've ever seen. I'm not on 99 other WhatsApp groups sharing footage of the other people on these marches who are doing nothing wrong. I am often told, for example, that Jewish people are on these marches, but no one would argue that they represent all Jewish people, or indeed that they represent all the marchers. So I just don't know how we are supposed to be honest in our response to calls for these marches to be banned, while, of course, nobody, as far as I'm aware, is meaningfully calling for the serial criminal Stephen Yaxley Lennon, who organises marches like it's going out of fashion. Nobody's, as far as I'm aware, none of the same people calling for these hate marches, what they call hate marches, to be banned, are calling for genuine, I mean, absolutely unapologetic disseminators of hate to have their march banned. I mean, that's mad, right, when you stop to think about it. Unless, of course, there is proof or there is evidence that that the pro-Palestine marches are dominated, I think is the word I would need to use. Tell me that I'm wrong. Tell me that if it's 10 out of 1,000, it's still enough to ban the whole march. I'm interested in that argument. But unless there's really, I mean, so unhelpful when people like Suella Braverman are first out of the blocks, because I think everybody decent and sensible is going to find themselves pushing in the opposite direction. But Suella Braverman is a broken clock. She might be right twice a day. But when she comes out and uses this language immediately and without pause or reflection, while also flirting with, of course, or not even flirting with, consummating her relationship with a politician who is remembered by his own school contemporaries as a vile and hideous Hitler-supporting anti-Semite. Things that he denies, although he denies pretty much everything when the moment arrives. So it's unhelpful when people like that use this kind of language, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong. I just don't know that I've ever been shown anything close to compelling evidence that these protests are populated by hateful people or by anti-Semites. I'm sure they're on the march. But there'll be people on the march who are domestic abusers. There'll be people on the march who are it's probably a couple of murderers on there who've got away with it. I mean, there'll be all sorts of hideous people in any congregation of human beings, but you wouldn't typify all of them according to the opinions, the views, or the activities of some of them. So I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't think globalise the intifada is a hill that is worth dying on for pro-Palestine supporters. I think you should agree that that phrase can be removed. It can be excised from the vocabulary of protest. Because again, it's the same as using the phrase hate march. You use the phrase globalize the intifada, which is very easily understood as a call for violence against the Jewish diaspora. It's very easily understood as that. And just because if you say it, you don't mean that, doesn't change the fact that it's very easily understood as that. And so it becomes something that you, as someone who wants to express your solidarity with Palestinian people, you can easily remove that phrase from your vocabulary if you are minded to use it. You can find a phrase or a slogan that is not easily comprehensible as a call to attack all Jewish people. But I just worry about, again, this word that runs through all these conversations like filey through a stick of rock. I worry about conflation, you know? You go on a march and a proportion of people on it shout globalize the intifada. You wish they wouldn't, but you are now guilty of agreeing with them and you are a hate marcher. So my experience is limited, right? I generally encounter pro-Palestine marchers only on their way home. So on a few occasions, I have seen what I will describe as little old ladies and a perfectly nice-looking middle-class residents of Ealing, because the last time I encountered a few, it was at Ealing Broadway Station. And you can tell that they've been because of the badge that they're wearing or the flag that they're carrying. And I've never encountered anything that would be remotely described as anti-Semitic. But every single one of them has been called a hate marcher by various members of the political establishment and the British media. Every single one of them has been called a hate marcher because they have gone on a hate march. How do we know it's a hate march? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. I'm not upset with Blackpool, Bill. I just thought I'd share it out a bit. And I went to Filey as a child sometimes on my holidays, and I've been using that stick of rock analogy quite a lot lately. So I just thought I'd mix it up a bit. But thanks for checking. I mean, there are no calls to ban a march that is absolutely steeped in hate. And there are calls to ban a march that I don't think is absolutely steeped in hate. I don't even know how much hate there is contained within its ranks. Unless you are selling the notion that criticising Benjamin Netanyahu's regime is tantamount to hating all Jews. In which case, I mean, you probably know this already, you are doing a hell of a lot more harm than good. So how do we know? Talk to people who've been on it from every angle, from every perspective. But it has to be an experience of the plurality, which means that it can't come exclusively from your social media activity. You have to have been on the streets, to paraphrase Hamilton, where it happens. 20 minutes after 11 is the time. 0345 6060 973 is the number.
This is LBC.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolf faces a battle of his own. In a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners, Wolf is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million-copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
22 minutes after 11 is the time. Shabana Mahmood so far has stood firm against calls to ban pro-Palestine marches. But of course, the deeper the perception goes that they are in fact hate marches, the more politically difficult that resolution becomes. And I just wonder whether it should. Is that a direction that we as a country should be travelling in? How do we know whether it's a hate march or not? And when does it become a hate march? How much hatefulness does there have to be in a crowd of 1,000 people before you can comfortably or accurately portray the entire crowd as being hateful? Farah is in Southfields. Farah, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome.
I have been on over 32 of the National Marches for Palestine over the last 2.5 years. So I've been around a lot of people. As far as the marches are concerned, you get anywhere between 50 to 100 to 150,000. I was on the one that was, there was a million of us actually going down to the US Embassy at one point. I think it was 2024. So I've seen a lot of people. Now, I have not seen, while I'm there, an anti-Semitic sign or anything calling for any harm to Jewish people or anything like that. I saw one sign actually a year ago, and there were two girls standing in front of me, and just so people don't think it's hateful Muslims, they were white. Mm. They're in their mid to late 20s, and they were holding a sign, and it said, from London to Gaza, long live the Intifada. Now, at that point, calling for the Intifada on public streets is illegal. I mean, it's obviously moved on to globalise the Intifada, which is also illegal. And I actually went straight up to these two girls, these youthful idiots, and I just said, I took the sign off them,
right.
And they sort of looked at me, and I said, one, it's illegal to do that. Two, you've got police looking at you. There are far more useful things to say than that particular phrase. And also, I will say, from the river to the sea, I don't believe is a genocidal chant, but I don't choose to say it because I have Jewish friends who are scared about that. I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of us. We're perfectly intelligent. We're only there because...
I'll be the judge of that, madam.
All right, then, James. Maybe not me, but, you know, there are people who are intelligent. We're there because we want to, you know, stop the cruelty. We don't want to see any more death. And there is also, you know, as we've moved on and we've seen a lot of attacks on our civil liberties, there is another part of me that turns up to, you know, protest marches because I'm like, if we stop doing it, they are going to take our rights away. So I'm not just talking about Palestinian people, but if we don't have peace in that area, it directly affects Jewish people as well. And I walk with thousands of Jews. And it is a great place to get a better understanding through going to these marches. I've looked at a particular activist group. It involves Israelis and Palestinians, and it's really open. And I've learned so much, especially about nuanced conversations about Zionism and that kind of thing.
Politeness seems like too mild a term to describe decisions not to use certain phrases because they can be construed as hideous, even if they can also be delivered and uttered by people who have no intention of being hideous. It's just if there's enough room for doubt there, then excise it from your vocabulary as you have chosen to do. Although, there's a version of the phrase river to the sea in the 1977 founding document, as I'm sure you know, of Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party. And I don't think that's genocidal either for the avoidance of doubt. How did those young women respond?
Well, they were a bit shocked that anybody came up.
Yes.
And I'm kind of a chubby Asian lady. So
my first band was called the Chubby Asian Ladies.
And they said, but you know, we're sticking up for Palestine. And I said, but you're not.
Yeah.
What you're doing is attracting all of the wrong attention. And this is all that people will talk about in the media. I mean, I am not going to repeat what I have witnessed from the counter-protest. But let's put it this way. I no longer take my daughters on those marches.
Okay.
Because when we go past the counter-protests, it's some of the songs that are now being sung and the way that they react to, some of them react to women is I'm not going to say it on national radio.
Okay.
It doesn't need to be said. But, you know, one thing I will say is that, you know, there's this whole idea that they're all anti-Semitic. If they were, why would you have Jewish people there? Why would you have Holocaust survivors there?
Inbox will, if it hasn't already, soon be pinging with people saying that they represent a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the Jewish population, of the Jewish community. But I mean, the other point is that they are there and they are safe. This is going to sound like a slightly silly question. But, and you've been on 32 marches and you've encountered two young white British women carrying a sort of pro-intifada placard, and you have personally confiscated their placard and cautioned them. How would you respond to the suggestion that you haven't been looking hard enough for hate?
Well, I'm there to speak up for peace, and actually I take a lot of photographs of all the signs that I see. Because I don't take my daughters on this anymore, I want to show them. They're very politically active and you know, that kind of thing. They're very interested in human rights and the rest of it. So I do take a lot of those. So I am looking at the signs. I'm not just blindly walking on my headphones listening to Taylor Swift. Mm. I am actually using my eyes.
Yeah. And that's what I wonder. I don't know who else we can turn to, but it's a self-selecting constituency, isn't it? People who have been on the marches report that to describe them as hate marches is ridiculous. People who have not been on the marches describe them as hate marches. And then you find two hideous people, like the ones who had the paraglider images on their backpacks. I think the timing of that was such, I probably need to check, that the ground offensive, the Israeli response, hadn't even begun at that point. So it was a doubly hideous celebration of Hamas's October the 7th terror attack. You find those examples and you pin them on people like you, Farah. Does it rankle at all? I mean, how do you personally, briefly if you would, because the news is next, how do you personally handle the allegation that you are a hate marcher? You may have heard people on this radio station describing you personally as a hate marcher simply by dint of being there.
Well, I'm not. And my question to them would be, what are you doing about making our society a far better place to live in? And what are you doing about bringing a little bit more justice and peace and stability to the world? Because this is the only thing that I can actually contribute towards. And just because I know you've got the news, all I will say is I will be going on that march in 2 weeks' time, because Tommy Robinson's also turning up. And I turn up to the anti-fascist ones just as much as I turn up to these ones. It's so important to do so, to show that solidarity.
Yeah, I think in some of the far-right protests, we should be urging people not to carry Israeli flags at them, because that of course, will add to the temperature and create more problems. Thank you, Farah. That's only one voice, and there is room for a lot more. The time now is 11:30. Lottie Morley has your headlines.
In the past few minutes, a 45-year-old man has been remanded in custody after appearing at Westminster magistrates charged with attempted murder. It's after two Jewish men were attacked in Golders Green on Wednesday. The housing secretary says he's calling time on rogue landlords as the new Renters' Rights Act comes in. Steve Reed has told LBC the updated rules will give renters the security and dignity they deserve. You can read his exclusive piece on the LBC app. And Donald Trump has agreed to scrap tariffs on Scottish whisky following the King and Queen's state visit. The King has travelled on to Bermuda after their four-day trip to the US ended yesterday. LBC weather, warm and sunny across the UK this afternoon with a few showers moving eastwards later, a high of 24 degrees.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
McDonald's breakfast is turning up the heat with a spicy new twist.
Calm down, not that spicy. Breakfast is for savouring, not suffering. Introducing McDonald's breakfast with Frank's Red Hot Ketchup. A spicy breakfast, suitable for the morning. Until 8th of June, served until 11 a.m, subject to availability.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day. And messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled my name in tea lights. And my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings. Next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
33 minutes after 11 is the time. I'm going to rattle through some texts and then we'll go to Josh and Lorraine on the phones. There's no point sending me a message, Saj, saying that you'd like to contribute but the lines are busy. You have to keep trying. The lines are constantly refreshing. Morning, James, writes Joe in Birmingham. Interesting that the mass killings of tens of thousands in Gaza is not hateful, but protesters protesting against those mass killings are labelled as hateful. Go figure. Remember, anything you hear on the programme, you are not just welcome, but indeed urged to challenge. Mark says using the phrase hate march is no different to calling all football fans hooligans because of the minority of hooligan fans. Yeah, but how big does the minority have to become before the accusation is close to accurate, Mark? 52-48? I don't know. This is a slippery slope, writes Toby. The opponents of protesters should not get to define what those protesters mean. Look at the bad faith demonisation of that term that Farah used, from the river to the sea, despite Israelis using it as well. Rebecca says it's not a hate march, it's a march of love and humanity, to which I feel bound to remind you that it is not love and humanity when there are two women with paraglider graphics on the back of their jackets celebrating the Hamas terror attack of October the 7th. But you can then remind me that the reason why these stories are so prominent in our minds and our memories is because there have been so few of them. I think Keir Starmer described it as venerating the murder of Jews, which is a really powerful choice of words. People wearing pictures of paragliders, you are venerating the murder of Jews. And he goes further. If you are marching with people wearing pictures of paragliders without calling it out, you are venerating the murder of Jews. And Farah, our first caller, taking issue with people marching with a placard that she found to be dangerous and ridiculous. A few more texts. I'll read this one out because I often read out the ones accusing me of all manner of hideous offences, but this is equally ridiculous, accusing me of not being sufficiently critical of the Israeli regime. Or is it? I mean, it's conflation, actually, Charlotte, I think. Is it? Stop placing it all on Netanyahu. People have voted for him for years. I share that simply to highlight the plurality, or no, the diversity of criticism that I receive. Calling them hate marches is like saying that everyone who voted Brexit was a racist. Not quite. I mean, it's not quite the same, but I can see a degree of your grievance. Of course, everybody who is racist loved Brexit, but that doesn't mean everyone who thought Brexit was going to be a good idea was definitely racist. And keep them coming. 11:36 is the time. Josh is in Chiswick. Josh, what would you like to say?
Hi there, James. Thanks for having me on. I didn't go on as many marches as Farah, so I can't sort of speak with the sort of authority that she did. I went on a few of the early ones, and I didn't see any evidence of anti-Semitism there. That doesn't mean it wasn't there, but I didn't see it. And I can speak from my own experiences as to why I attended. Before I do that, though, I want to say that my heart goes out to the Jewish community in North London and in Manchester and all across the country, and around the world, indeed, actually. But I think I went there because I don't like innocent people being killed.
Yes.
Right?
Didn't like it on October the 7th and haven't liked it subsequently. I'm the same as you, I think.
Yeah, and without wanting to, you know, some of my best friends are black descent. Sure. On October the 7th, I called friends in Tel Aviv to check that they were okay, right?
Yes.
I mean, the least I could do, but this is, I'm just trying to say that I do know Jewish people, and I think it's racist to assume that because you are a certain religion or ethnicity, you all think the same way.
Yes, I
have
I
other Jewish friends here, is Jewish Israeli friends indeed, who are utterly opposed to Netanyahu, are big supporters of the Green Party in the UK.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I'm here because I hate seeing innocent people dying. That's why I marched. I'm against, obviously, innocent people dying or being attacked on the streets of the UK. And, you know, I also went on marches against the Iranian regime. Right. And, can say, oh, well, you obviously love protests. you're being inconsistent or whatever.
I don't think you're being inconsistent at all. I think you're the most consistent contributor to the discourse by being. I mean, I've always said since the October the 7th terror attack, I'm not going to feel more heartbreak or outrage about the death of an innocent based upon an accident of their birth. They are equally hateful. The death of an innocent is an equally hateful act. The Iranian regime is hideous. The idea that you can somehow oppose Donald Trump's illegal war or Netanyahu's activities, the idea that it makes you an admirer or a fan of the Iranian regime is a position, I mean, so stupid that I don't think light can pass through it. So you're doing the right thing, aren't you? But it's rare. It's odd that you think you do look odd for doing something that's the opposite of odd.
Well, I mean, I look odd generally, James.
That's you and me both, life, mate.
But I mean, I think, you know, and the Iranian one was interesting because there were protests outside the embassy, which I did attend, but then there were protests outside the American embassy encouraging them to attack Iran, which I didn't attend because I thought it would end badly. And I think I may have been proved right on that. But I just think, it's about in-groups and out-groups, and it's about power dynamics. Right? The Jewish community in the UK is a tiny, 350,000 people that go across across the country, I've heard. You know, they are I don't want to patronize them, but, you know, in numbers, they are a vulnerable community. Right?
Yes.
So when they are being persecuted and attacked, of course, every right-thinking person and every, humane person should be utterly appalled against that and stand up against racism and anti-Semitism.
Do you know what you're describing? It's something that I haven't zoned back on for a while. You're not allowed to not have a side. Do you see what I mean? And I think that, I don't know who is responsible for this, but the discourse has led us to a place where you're not allowed to not have a side. If you're marching in solidarity with Palestinian people, you must hate Jews.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just obscene and ridiculous. But, and if you are against the Israeli regime, you can't be against the Iranian regime as well. Of course you can. It's as if you're not allowed to have nuance. It's sort of the fetishization almost of footballification.
Well, it's footballification. It's the siloization, the atomization of social media as well.
That doesn't help. Mainstream media, mate. Let's not forget. There's loads of people using the phrase hate march to describe something they've never been near.
Yes, exactly. And I just think it's very difficult to just say, and yeah, you know, you can say, oh, you know, grow your hair and be a hippie and sit in a field or whatever, but wanting peace and wanting people not to be killed or maimed, should be a universal desire, I think. And,
you sound a bit like King Charles, Josh. There's something nobody's ever said to you before.
Definitely not.
that was the lovely nuance or the lovely subtext of the speech that he gave to Congress the other day. I'm going to read a message from Robin. I don't know which one of us it's aimed at, but I suspect there's only one of us that he has a physical image of in his mind as he writes it. You don't look odd, he writes. I think you look welcoming and cuddly. So we'll both take that, shall we?
Well, I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that into the bank holiday weekend, James. It's a lovely compliment. Thank you very much.
Well, and have a great one. Everybody, actually. 11:41 is the time. Clive is in St. Albans. Clive, what would you like to say?
I've been on several of these marches. I'm not a Jew or a Muslim. I'm a Christian myself. I've been a Christian for many years. And the thing that drives me to go on these marches is because of my Christian belief, seeing people dying on TV and seeing people dying in such utterly miserable circumstances. It's really offensive, and I'm looking for an outlay to be able to go along and say, look, this is not something that we approve of. This is not something I want to happen. And if that moves the dial even by a millimetre, then it's worth me sacrificing a Saturday to go along to these marches.
Yes. I mean, even if it doesn't move the dial a millimetre, it's worth trying.
Absolutely.
So you are a hate marcher. You realise that in the eyes of many commentators and politicians.
And they're completely entitled to use whatever words they want, freedom of speech. But I know in my heart I'm a Christian, and I know that when I go to on a Sunday morning to church and I speak to the other members of the congregation, there's a lot of older people there who aren't able to go along because they don't have the mobility.
Yeah.
And they congratulate me on going to the march, and they say to me, you're going on that march on our behalf because we can't go ourselves. And these people who were, if you saw them, they're these kind of very bastions of Britain. They are white Anglo-Saxon, they are Christian. They have love in their heart. What they want to see is people being able to live, being able to look after their families, being able to grow, being able to live side by side. I go along because I have love. That has nothing to do with hate. It has everything to do with compassion.
But you will have encountered some hate or some hateful behaviour while you've been on these marches or not?
I have. It's very, very rare. I think I've seen it twice, maybe three times. I've been on lots of these marches. And every time I've tried to go over and talk to these people, someone else has got there first. Someone else has said that thing that you're chanting, no, that's not what the march is about. Or someone has pointed to the sign and said, hold on, that sign could be read in this way. I don't think you should have that sign there.
And that is essentially, this is why yesterday's show was slightly dispiriting when we struggled to come up with really meaningful things that would improve the safety of British Jews at the moment. Really meaningful things. And it veered from the unsatisfactory to the frankly ridiculous with the bloke calling for Britain to become more like Saudi Arabia, where public worship of anything is not allowed except Islam. But so that's one of the things that is being called for, and the evidence, anecdotal, of course, have to be acknowledged, is that that's already happening. The sort of self-regulation, if you like, of these marches is already happening. And when you get a photograph of those placards and we react to it, we are repulsed by it, understandably. What we don't know is whether or not somebody like you or like Farrah or like lots of other people getting in touch with me have actually tried to reason with the person waving it, the person chanting it.
The vast majority of people there have come there for good, conscientious reasons. And if not, that's not why you're there and you demonstrate that. People will speak to you. People will say, hold on, I don't want to be associated with this. Or do you realise the thing that you're saying is wrong? And that is a beautiful thing, because that's the thing that we need. That's discourse. That's people talking to somebody. That's somebody saying, hating this other group doesn't help the group that you care about.
Mm.
What we want is more love. What we need is more discussion amongst people. Planning particular phrases doesn't help. What does help is having a discussion and showing somebody this is what using that phrase causes to the other person, being able to empathize with them, seeing somebody else being scared or being frightened or somebody at the edge of tears.
Yes.
And if somebody chooses not to use that phrase because they have empathy, that is far more powerful than any sort of ban.
Yes, well, and in my own small way, I tried to do that earlier with reference to the globalise the intifada phrase, which I think people should not use for the very simple reason that it causes grave and genuine upset to many people. And you can make other points of solidarity and critique without doing the upsetting bit, without doing that upsetting bit. Thank you. Your fellow congregants are correct. You are a great ambassador for your faith, Clive. It's been a pleasure listening to you. It is 11:46. And of course, Josh in Chiswick pointing out he also marches against the Iranian regime, which in many ways is a uniquely powerful image as well, because it is against that sort of universal revulsion at the slaughter of innocents. I remember expressing that and wondering how long or how far things were going to go before you began to feel that the response to the hideousness of October the 7th was approaching hideousness itself. And I remember wishing with you that we never got to that point, and some of you were telling me at the time that we already had. But I don't think anybody tells me now that we haven't. It's 11:47.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Ahead of next week's mammoth set of local and national elections, we'll be joined by the big hitters from across the major parties asking for your vote. What will it mean for politics where you are, or politics across the UK, and will these elections be the Prime Minister's last? We'll also be looking back on the pageantry in politics, the King's visit to the United States. Has it really changed anything at all? And after the Golders Green stabbing, has anti-Semitic violence become utterly normalised?
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the ribbon can without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics. And options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
3, 2, 1, 0% APR on all-electric Mini Cooper.
What was that, Luton?
Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term.
OK, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus. T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Add some sizzle to your bank holiday with Lidl on our range of deluxe hot dogs and burgers. Now 20% off with Lidl Plus. Tender, juicy and almost a little too moorish. Lidl. More to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See Lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 6th of 5th 26.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Wander the streets with more wonder. With up to £200 off city breaks and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and hassle protected. T's and C's apply.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
10 to 12 is the time. When is a hate march not a hate march? And equally important question, when is a hate march a hate march? And how can a march where a man who was filmed giving what was, to all intents and purposes, a stone-cold Nazi salute be cheered at a march that is not a hate march? Whereas a march containing all of the people contributing to our programme today have been labelled as hate marches. And that is, it's Trumpian almost, that, isn't it? In its inversion of the facts. When is a hate march not a hate march? When the Nazi saluter is addressing the crowd. When is a hate march a hate march? When, Christians are showing solidarity with people being slaughtered. You march against Hamas. Does that become a hate march? Because you're sort of expressing, I don't know. It's just such a strange phraseology that took hold so early, and I don't quite understand why it was allowed to, and why so many people were so keen to join in without going to check for themselves. And if you can't check for yourself, or if you haven't checked for yourself, then you can ask people who have. You can ask people who have. 11:51 is the time. Let's cross now live to Westminster Magistrates Court, where Fraser Knight has been in attendance as the man charged with those Golders Green attacks appeared in court. Fraser, what can you tell us?
Well, James, Essa Suleiman, who's 45 years old and has been in police custody since the attack on Wednesday morning, appeared here in courtroom number one of Westminster Magistrates Court. He walked into the dock wearing a grey cell-issued tracksuit. He was flanked by two custody officers and sat down and very quickly tightly folded his arms. Now, he's quite a medium build guy. He has almost like a buzz cut, and wears I was sitting in the courtroom, it looked like he had a mark on the right-hand side of his face. It may have been a tattoo, though. And he was here charged with three counts of attempted murder and one count of possessing a knife. Now, two of the attempted murders relate to the two Jewish men who we saw stabbed on Wednesday morning in Golders Green. The court heard some more details about their injuries. First of all, 34-year-old Shlomi Rand, who we're told this morning has been released from hospital. The court heard he had a stab wound to the chest. He suffered a collapsed lung, but thankfully is now out of hospital. And then 76-year-old Moshi Shine, who was standing by a bus stop when he was attacked. The court heard he has a stab wound to the neck. Now, thankfully, his injuries are not life-threatening. He is still in hospital, but he's in a stable condition. And then, James, the third count of attempted murder relates to another incident that happened just 2 hours before the attack in Golders Green. This one was in southeast London, in the borough of Southwark. So, Essa Suleiman, first appearance, wasn't asked to enter any pleas at this stage. He only spoke to tell the court his name and his date of birth. But the judge here remanded him into custody and told him his case now will go to the Old Bailey, where it's expected to appear on the 15th of May.
Do we know any more about the first victim, the one in, I think it was Southwark, was it, in southeast London?
There's not been a huge amount of details that have been released publicly yet on that case, James, but we do know it was in Southwark and it happened, of course, just a few hours before the attack. As this case, though, progresses to the Crown Court, to the Old Bailey, there will be more details that come out through that process.
Fraser Knight, many thanks indeed. Live, as I said, from Westminster Magistrates Court, where the man charged with the Golders Green attacks has been appearing while we have been on air. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we spent a day, 2 hours in fact, yesterday, wondering what the more meaningful measures to protect British Jews would actually look like and involve. And it was not an entirely satisfactory experience, was it? Especially if you're Jewish. It just proved rather difficult to put any flesh upon the bones of something must be done. It's why I think attacking the politicians in charge, particularly when it's undertaken by politicians not in charge, is so ugly. Utterly predictable, of course. Nigel Farage welcomed onto the stage, or certainly his party welcomed onto the stage for a hero's welcome, a woman who had been publicly calling for a pogrom and was correctly jailed as a response. So that the idea that he has concerns about public safety is questionable at the very least. But if, unless you've got really clear ideas about what could be done better, it's really unhelpful to just shout something must be done. And that might be why ban the marches has become a bit of a mantra. But why? Because they're hate marches. Okay, fine, ban them then. But what if they're not? Or how many incidents of hatefulness would we need to accrue before we could comfortably and confidently conclude that the whole thing should be called off? Because I don't remember many calls for the march where a Nazi-saluting billionaire was cheered to the rafters, receiving similar levels of scrutiny or criticism from these ones, which in our experience are populated by rather nice-sounding people. And you have to presume they are the massive majority. They might not be, but you are free to ring me and tell me that you have seen much worse things than have so far been described. Lorraine is in Reigate. Lorraine, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning, James.
Hello, Lorraine.
Hi. Yes, I was on a protest march last autumn protesting against Israel's decimation of Gaza. The march itself was peaceful. I didn't see one example of hatred except from the counter march. And that was shocking for me. I didn't expect that.
Now, the second woman caller to tell me that.
Yeah, the police were kept keeping the protesters back, and they were carrying Israeli flags.
Okay, this is your testimony.
Yes, it is. And they were shouting at us, they were screaming at us. There were also flags, you know, from the far right, you know, the weaponized Union Jack, you know. But our march went off peacefully. You know, the people there couldn't have been nicer, James. I didn't see one evidence of hatred. I didn't see anything like that. It was all that was in our minds was to stop the massacre of the children, the women, the men in Gaza, to stop it, you know. So when they're talking about hate marches, I just, you know, I was moved to call you, James.
Yes, I can
The way
tell.
I was moved to go on that march. I know that, you know, I'm just one person who can't perhaps do anything. But, you know, but as a group, we can at least show that we're concerned, you know, and that we have love in our hearts, not hatred.
Why do you think people are calling you a hate marcher?
Because I think there's a political agenda here, James, you know. I think that the government, you know, hasn't called out.
Well, the government hasn't banned the marches or joined in that description. If, you know, the government hasn't been involved in that political... Well, I don't know, I probably should have let you finish speaking before I jumped in, Lorraine, but plus a change.
No, I think the government, though, has, you know, it hasn't really... It doesn't say, you know, that... it doesn't call out Israel. It's calling out a group of perhaps 200,000 people marching through London. In fact, I noticed that the press itself, the papers, on the particular march that I was on, there was perhaps a paragraph, and they said there were 20,000 marchers. We knew there were at least 200,000 that day.
I mean, there's always, whoever is marching, there's always a little bit of dispute over the... Over the overall numbers, but it doesn't affect the central thrust of all the points that you've made and the experiences that you had. And oddly, I can hear in your voice actually that process of being moved to talk and indeed to act. I'm a bit late for the news, but I want to squeeze in at least one more call if I can. Thank you, Lorraine. Have a lovely bank holiday. James is in Blackheath. James, what made you pick up the phone?
James, I wanted to tell you my experience. I've been on about 20 or so marches. I photographed the marches. So.
Okay. Professionally or just for fun?
I do it for myself.
Okay.
I do it for myself. I've never been paid for a photograph of the marches, but I am a professional photographer, but
okay.
I do this for myself.
All right.
A couple of years ago, the big one that one of your other callers talked about earlier on,
yes,
where we marched from Park Lane to the American Embassy. So... It's a bit of a stroll. I started at the back of the march, and I zigzagged through the march, trying to get as many faces as I can.
Yeah.
When I got to the American Embassy, people were still coming thick and fast. So I thought, I'm done here. So I walked all the way back to the start of the march, and life at that point is a bit like, if you can imagine... Wembley's kicking out and you think you've left your phone in your seat, trying to get back in. So
yeah.
I'm against the crowd, and the bit between St James's Park and Victoria, there's a bit of a bottleneck, so we're hardly moving.
Right.
This is, you know, most of the march is already, you know, what I thought of most of the march is already at the American Embassy by now.
So it was so huge.
They cited a million people. Who knows if it was a million people or not?
Sure.
It felt like a million people. It was huge.
And what were the worst things you saw? Because I'm just conscious of the time, even by my standards. I don't want to completely destroy the schedule. What were the worst things you saw?
But I just want to get to the crux of my story.
Okay.
As I was walking against the crowd,
yeah,
everybody was apologising to me.
Oh, okay.
I just thought, this is the most British thing I've ever been involved in. I've lived in London most of my life, you know?
For the jostling. Apologies for the jostling.
Politics. I've never seen any anti-Semitism. I've photographed, made a point of photographing so many Jewish people. They just would not return. Not return.
Mm.
You know, people, I'm not saying people that go, oh, I think they might be Jewish. She looks a little bit Jewish. People carry placards in Jewish, not in my name.
In Hebrew.
I'm a son of a Holocaust survivor. You know, I'm disgusted by this. I'm no hate marcher. People, they would not return, you know?
I do. Well, I think so. And it's interesting because, I mean, you're probably going to have seen more than anybody else on the marches by dint of what you're doing when you're in attendance. I got a couple of texts to end with. Thank you, James. I am Jewish, writes Michael, and I abhor some of the actions of the Israeli government, including the expansion of the settlements. I do not want the marches to be banned. What is confusing sometimes is why there are not similar marches in respect of other conflicts. There are many. The fact that a few may also turn up at a protest against the Iranian regime doesn't address this. This adds to a feeling of isolation of Jews in Britain, something we may talk about on another day. And this from Deb. Not sure what march you're now caller has been on. The hatred I've seen is off the scale. It's hard to identify which caller you're talking about, Deb, because they've all described the precise opposite of what you've seen. Give us a ring next time and we'll get your experiences on the show as well.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a man has appeared in court charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green. Essa Suleiman, who's 45, has been remanded in custody and will be back in court on May the 15th. LBC's Fraser Knight is outside Westminster Magistrates.
45-year-old Essa Suleiman was not asked to enter any pleas at this stage. He only spoke to tell the court his full name and his date of birth. The judge remanded him into custody and said his case now will go to the Old Bailey.
The UK's terror threat level was upgraded from substantial to severe for the first time in more than 4 years yesterday. A 49-year-old woman has been charged with causing the death of 2 8-year-old girls in South London. Claire Fremantle is accused of dangerous driving after a car drove into a primary school in Wimbledon in 2023. Her lawyers say she will plead not guilty. The co-founder of clothing firm Superdry has been found guilty of rape. James Holder, who's 54, is accused of attacking a woman at her home in 2022. He denies the charges and says it was consensual. The housing secretary has told LBC he's calling time on rogue landlords as the new Renters' Rights Act comes in. Steve Reed said the updated rules will give renters the security and dignity they deserve. Chief Executive of Generation Rent, Ben Toomey, has told LBC the changes will give renters stability.
It's ironic that the landlord groups are calling this a major disruption, because disruption is exactly what's been happening to renters' lives every single time we're kicked out having done nothing wrong and with no reason given.
You can read the Housing Secretary's exclusive piece on the LBC app. A think tank is calling for the triple lock pension to be replaced with a system which allows people to access cash earlier in life. The Tony Blair Institute says the current scheme is outdated and increasingly unaffordable. More than 1,500 NHS workers have used Martha's Rule in its first 18 months. It's a formal escalation process which gives families formalised 24/7 access to a second opinion. It was set up after the death of 13-year-old Martha Mills in South London. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 60 points at 10,316. The pound buys $1.36 and a euro 16. LBC weather, warm and sunny across the UK this afternoon with a few showers moving eastward later. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 6 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Well, this is a bit odd. There's probably a word for this. But the topic that we're going to talk about next, as a piece of radio, I think will do what the topic does in real life. Does that make sense, Keith? No. Shall I try again? All right. So we're going to talk about something that people do and the feelings that it engenders. And I think that this bit of radio will engender similar feelings to the practice that we're going to talk about. Is that better? Are you with me now? Yeah? All right. So here's a first. Bird watching. Okay, you may be aware that I have become a bit of a twitcher in recent years. I haven't given a great deal of thought to why. It began actually as it's chicken and egg. Sorry, it's birds. Yeah, I must have been interested before I did it, but a million years ago. And I think even before we started doing all the online stuff and going viral, so I'm not even sure that a record of this would exist. But a million years ago, I went out on Wormwood Scrubs here in London with a cool guy, a really cool guy called David Lindo, I think. But his professional title was the Urban Birder. And I can't remember why. I had a producer at the time who thought that we should just be providing a bit more light and shade on the programme. I was hideously opposed to this prospect because it meant me carrying on working long after the programme had finished. So I had to go out with a flipping recorder and a microphone like a proper journalist and go out and do things and talk to people. We went to the control room of London Underground. That was pretty cool, actually. We went to the control room of London Underground. Is that out by Hanger Lane way? I can't remember, but we did a few things. We went to Battersea Power Station while it was still a building site. That was actually, that maybe that producer was onto something, going out. And we went bird watching with the Urban Birder. And I think it was a kestrel. So I've been on Wormwood Scrubs a few times over the years. I used to live in that neck of the woods. I had a mate. We used to take his boy to fly his kite there. And I'd never really communed with nature in London, apart from urban foxes, I suppose. And it's so, I'm sort of saying, what bird watching do you do when you're in London? What bird watching do you do? And it just sort of takes me out, shows me some stuff, and then it literally shows me, would it be a kestrel? Would it be a kestrel in central London? He shows me a kestrel. He says, oh, look at that, look at that. I get my binoculars and I look and he shows, and it just flipping swoops out of the sky, as you would expect from a bird, and grabs a rodent from the middle of the grassland on Wormwood Scrubs, the scrubs, and then carries on in a beautiful arc onto a post in the middle of the grass where it sits, and it sort of devours a vole, would it be? I don't know. I've never known. It was a moment of transcendental pleasure for me. Look, if you're a vegetarian, I don't know. Do you get upset by nature being red in tooth and claw? But I loved it. I began at that moment to be a little bit more interested in bird watching. I'll tell you why we're talking about it, in case you think I've gone completely bonkers. About 750,000 Gen Zers, that's 16 to 29-year-olds in Britain, regularly enjoy watching birds. You can stop your Sid James cackling and your Carry On film references, please. You know what I'm talking about, matron. It's a tenfold increase since 2018. This is research published by the RSPB. And, I mean, that's extraordinary. I wonder if there's anything else wholesome and healthy that has seen a tenfold increase. That's over 1,000%, Keith. Over 1,000% increase over a 10-year period. I can't think of anything else that is wholesome and healthy that has chalked up those sort of numbers. And I want to do the why of it. I want to do the why and the what of it. Because I can't tell you what it is that I love. So I have been, and also, I'll tell you something else weird. I don't just quite like birdwatching. I saw some sea eagles while I was on holiday a couple of weeks ago. I was in the West Highlands. And I think there's only, I saw golden eagles and sea eagles. And it's just, I can't put into words what pleasure I derived from it. Not everybody in our party derived the same levels of pleasure as I did. In fact, I'm not sure anybody did, to be honest with you, but everybody was at least interested. There was a degree of curiosity, excitement. But I was transported. There's something about the swoop of a sea eagle, and there was a fledgling there as well. The chick that they had last year has kind of grown up a bit, and they were still moving around the island as a threesome. And it meant, because they nest there, and it's a relatively small island, it meant that you could almost guarantee, I don't think it would be possible to visit the island we were staying on without seeing the sea eagles. It was just, I think they told me there's only 60 nesting pairs in the UK or something like that. Why? They were quite a long way away. It's not like you're right up close to them. It's not like they've landed in your garden and you can have a proper butcher's. You can have a... So why is it so exciting? And then I kind of remembered that my introduction to it recently was via an app called Chirpomatic, which involves hearing bird song and recording it and then running it through the app to find out what bird you've seen. And so that means that I've got a collection in front of me now of birds that in some cases I haven't even seen. I've just heard them and recorded it, and I've got a kick out of that as well. I never would have done this as a topic because it's too personal and a bit strange if I hadn't seen the news today that nearly a million generation, we're always talking about this lot being in trouble and this lot being in you know, so it's lovely to think of this. I'd give you my latest. Do you want to hear my latest, Keith? I'll give you the latest sort of seven or eight on mine. I've got a grey heron, a blue tit, a blackbird, a song thrush, a chaffinch, a dunnock, a great tit and a goldfinch. And I got the goldfinch deliberately. I changed the bird feed in my garden in order to tempt goldfinch. I got them. I could sit and watch them for hours. Do you know what the collective noun is for goldfinch? It's not goldfinches, Keith. It's not flock or bunch. It's a charm. It's a charm of goldfinch. A charm of goldfinch. And I now have charm. And you have to get, they're pretty fickle, you know, goldfinch. Goldfickle, I call them. And if you don't keep your supplies replenished, they'll probably move on and find something else. And also, stop feeding the birds around this time of year, because A, they don't need it, and B, the feeders can become incubators for disease, I was reading in The Guardian a couple of weeks ago. So, I kind of got three questions that I want you to help me with. The first is, I want you to tell a skeptic. I did this with train spotting, didn't I, a few months ago? Because I went train spotting. Oh, man. Who is presenting this programme, and what happened to James O'Brien? I went train spotting. I remember sitting at a station in Ealing where they've got this train that has been re-engineered as an electric train. I think it's the most effective or the most efficient electric train in the world, and it just runs on a little branch line in Ealing. I think it's only on Saturdays. And I read about it in someone's blog, and I just thought, well, I've got nothing on today. I'll just hop on a bus. It's only 10 minutes away. I'll go and have a look. And the enthusiasm of the train spotters was so infectious that it became... I was intrigued and curious about the train, but I didn't get transported by the train. I got transported by the enthusiasm and the excitement of the people being transported by the train. So let me rephrase that. I got transported by the train. I mean, I got on it and I went somewhere and came back again, but I didn't have the transcendental experience that I had when I was looking at the sea eagles. I didn't feel like I do in a good yoga session, or do you know when, like, if you're at a concert and suddenly time stops and you're in a magical place, like a liminal emotional space. So I was transported emotionally by the reactions of the other people watching the trains, particularly the young lads who I think were some of them were wearing the sunflower badges to denote autism or other things, and they seemed, I mean, like almost beyond excited. It was obviously the highlight of their month, let alone their day. And it was impossible to sit there and not be affected by it. But I don't really get train spotting. I just want to make, that's the point that I'm making. So I know what a skeptic is. I need to say something now, and I need you to pay attention. Don't ring me about train spotting. All right, we'll do that another day. We're not doing it today. Do not ring me, text me, message. Do not give me any train spotting content, please. Because what I want from you at 12:16 is an attempt to describe to a skeptic the joy of bird watching. The younger you are, I don't want to say the younger the better, but obviously the topic we're discussing is specific to Generation Zers, 16 to 29 year olds. If you are as surprised as I am to find yourself loving the ornithology, and crucially, you are young, you are in that age group, then I want you to have a crack at explaining to a skeptic what the pleasure is, what the joy is. 03456060973. The second thing I want you to do, well, actually, this sounds a bit silly, but I really mean it. So explain to a skeptic the joy of ornithology. Who currently listening to this program has seen the rarest bird? So if you think you might genuinely have seen the rarest bird, you are required to ring in on 03456060973. And I can't remember what the third question is. But it will be something along the lines of, how did you get into it? I mean, it's free. It's easy. It's universal. Pretty much anybody can do it. It's hardly surprising. Oh, yeah. The third question is, why do you think so many young people are getting into it? We might answer that with the first question about what the appeal is. So, why? What is the appeal? Explain to a skeptic why ornithology is wonderful. Why are all the young people doing it? Easy for you to answer if you are a young person. And finally, who listening to this program at this moment has actually seen the rarest bird? And I will use Google to adjudicate on how rare the bird you've seen actually is. And I've got two categories for this. No one's going to ring me, are they, on this? But I've got two categories anyway. One is UK and one is overseas. So if you're a hardcore twitcher and you've travelled somewhere else in the world to do it, then you have your own category. So we've got international and domestic. Rarest in this country, I wouldn't even know where to start, but also rarest internationally. So 03456060973. And when I said train spotter, I meant railway enthusiasts. My apologies. I meant railway enthusiasts. So what is the appeal of bird spotting, bird watching even? Why are all the kids doing it? And who has seen the rarest bird, domestic and international division? It's 12:19, it's Friday, it's a long weekend. Let's have a nice time together until the end of the show.
LBC.
Danzin.
Jensin.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both captain hats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was 2 pastries, 1 boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
20 minutes after 12, do you know? I'm going to share that one, all right? Do you know what Keith just said? Can you guess what Keith just said? So I'm looking at a full switchboard. I don't know. It might be really boring. We'll find out by the end of the hour. Keith just said, this one's really taken off. This is what I have to work with on a daily basis, actually. And then Rebecca, the assistant producer of this program, she just said, the calls are really flying in. This one's really taken off and the calls are really flying in. Don't you dare. How dare you? You claim you were applauding Rebecca, but you were really applauding yourself. Eleanor, are you not joining in with this? This work, I think this is called workplace banter. You got nothing to add to this? The calls are really flying in. This one's really taken off. I'm also not convinced that they're not all laughing at me for sharing my slightly pedestrian enthusiasm, but I make no apology for it. Simon is in Icaria. Is it Calimera? Calispera? Hierate, Simon. Dicanis.
Calispera.
There we go. Yeah, that's it. First though. Why did you pick up the phone? I'll do that bit in English.
I'm going to speak English, James. Yeah. We've spoken before.
I know we have.
I picked up the phone because I love bird watching. And living here, I have seen a very, very rare bird, which you need to look up. It's called a golden oriole.
I don't have to look it up. The Eurasian golden oriole, I think you're talking about. The bright yellow one with the black wings.
Bright yellow. Yeah.
And that was in Greece. That was in Icaria.
Yeah, it's in Icaria. Yeah, I've seen them.
How many? And it's, do they flock? Do they flock or do you see them individually?
No, you see them on their own. But it's just incredible. You know, I spent a few years ago, I spent £400 on a pair of binoculars. You know.
Because you're taking it seriously. I'm just having a bit of a rethink, Simon. I don't know how we're going to...
Go on.
I don't know how I'm going to judge this. A golden oriole is obviously, a Eurasian golden oriole, to be correct, is obviously quite rare. But what if the next...
It is.
Yeah, I know it is. And I've got no reason to doubt you. You're a stand-up guy.
What's the rarest bird that you've ever seen,
I've seen very little by way of rare birds, as it goes.
Well, you need to get out, mate.
I know. Well, I'm in Greece again in the summer, so I'll be keeping an eye out for... Well, I've seen a toucan, but they're not rare where I saw them. I saw them in I think I was in Guatemala or somewhere like a walking Guinness advert.
For example, right, let me tell you, right, for years I used to go to the Isles of Scilly which is, if you've ever been there, I recommend it, absolutely beautiful place.
Mm.
And I saw a bird there called a red start, which are very rare.
So you've gone domestic and international?
I've gone domestic and international.
So you've got the opening the batting in the domestic league is the red start. Start with a T, is it?
Yes, start. Yeah,
start. And in the international leagues, Simon and Icaria, currently leading on both divisions, is the Eurasian golden oriole. The problem I've got, exactly, which I should have identified before I started talking, but that's often the case on this so-called programme, the problem I've got is I don't think there's... Is there a ranking of rareness? Is there like a chart? Well, there is. Have you found it? Don't. Why are you nodding? Is there? Where is it then?
Of course there is. Of course there is, because this is why people sort of go destroying the countryside, piling over fences and everything else.
Yes, but I need to find it before I can decide who wins, don't I? Because you're currently winning, but only because there's nobody else in either league, so anyone would be winning. You could have been winning with a magpie, mate, or a crow. Or I tell you what annoys me, and this is one for the fellow Twitchers. If you're using one of the apps to do it on sound, flipping robins, man. They are everywhere. Every time you hear it, oh, that's a new one. I'll listen to that. It's another robin. It's a flipping robin. Robin, robin, robin. All over the shop. Right, you're on. So we've got a red start and a Eurasian golden oriole. And because Eleanor hasn't joined in with the jokes, she can find a chart of birds that we put these into. And then we get an idea of what is rarest and what is not rarest. Speaking of jokes, you'll like this, Simon. Andy's been in touch. He says £400 for binoculars. They must have seen you coming a mile off. Bank holiday. Flo's in Brighton. Flo, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, hello, James. Flo. Nice to speak to you.
Likewise.
I've always been obsessed with animals and birds. I grew up very near to Richmond Park.
Oh, yes.
The first place my mum would let me jump on the bus on my own, and I'd spend the whole day sort of drawing animals and drawing birds, and it just brought me a real sense of peace and, I guess, connection a little bit. So much so that now as an adult, I mean, I have a master's in animal behaviour, but I'm obsessed with birds. I love my favourite thing to do at the weekend is take my dog somewhere kind of on the downs. I live in Brighton these days, and get out the Merlin Bird app and sort of see how many birds and new species we can collect in certain areas. I think I said to a producer, it reminds me a little bit of modern day Pokemon Go, but real.
Yeah, so that's an interesting element of it, and that ties in with the railway enthusiasts as well, doesn't it? That you are collecting. It's like stamp collecting, yeah. And that's what I do on my app with the bird sounds. But what about when you're in the moment, when you've got a bird in focus, you've got a bird in sight? Describe to a skeptic why that feeling is so special.
I think for me, as I'm 32, and you know, we're kind of growing up in a time when everything feels very hopeless. The planet's dying around us. For me, it gives me an absolute sense of peace and connection. There's something called the biophilia hypothesis.
Oh yes.
Which, if you're interested in eco-psychology, which I wrote my undergraduate thesis on, is basically to do with the connection with nature. And if you look at our time as a species living on the planet, you know, the time that we have spent in an industrial concrete world is minimal compared to the time we've spent with animals. It's deeply ingrained in us to actually get something and get a lift out of being connected with nature. It leads back to first generation romanticism as well. You know, the things that, you know, Shelley and Byron and all of them wrote about, which is the hair standing up on the back of your neck, the transcendental when you're out in the woods. There's something truly magical about it that we don't quite understand. And, you know, and in layman's terms, they're dinosaurs. So that's really cool to be around them and kind of watch their behavior. I think they're absolutely fascinating.
Some more than others. When a heron swoops over you, there's quite a few grey herons near me, but it's like a pterodactyl.
It is, but that's
I think
cool.
It might be. I've obviously never encountered a pterodactyl in the wild.
I think the closest I have is when I did my master's down in Exeter, I spent some time working in Paignton Zoo, and we would watch a lot of the engagement between the zookeepers and the cassowaries, which I don't know if you've ever seen a cassowary.
There's a children's program that's got a cassowary bird in it.
They are dinosaurs. They're scary.
So you've got it all covered. You've got the poetry of it covered, but you've also got the kind of collecting nature of it, kind of ticking them off, Pokemon Go element of it covered, and then the transcendental element of it as well. It must be so, and that's why the young people are doing it. People who are even younger than you are doing it, because it's good for your mental health.
It instills hope. It instills hope and a connection with the planet as the planet's dying. You know, I've been fortunate to do research all around the world. I've seen some phenomenal species. And I don't know if it's necessarily a particularly rare one, but another one to add to your list of connection was when I was doing an internship out in Muscat in Oman. Yes. I saw an Indian roller bird. Give that a Google. It's one of the most phenomenal birds you'll ever see in your life.
Right, that's in the International League. I don't know whether you're going to overtake it. First place, it's the Eurasian Golden Oriole, but the Indian roller bird is coming up fast on the outside lane. The Indian roller bird for the win, by a nose. What's your entry for the domestic league?
I was recently walking in a woodland just outside of Lewes, outside of Brighton, called Lofton Woods. It's beautiful, incredible place to walk. And I hit about 23 different species of bird, and I managed to hit a short-eared owl.
Lovely.
Which I was really delighted at.
When you say is hit the word that proper Twitchers use?
Not with a ball.
No, I know. I knew that. I just wanted to know if that's the kind of lingo I should now be adopting as a nascent
I think it's,
Twitcher.
It's when I Shazam it on my bird app, basically. Yeah. Merlin bird ID, and I was delighted to.
Oh, there's one there. I wonder what that one was. Just behind you.
Or in front of you.
Why would it be behind you?
Do you know what it is? It looks like possibly a missile thrush.
Oh, lovely.
But I'm in Queen's Park, so
happy days.
Yeah, there's a couple around, but yes.
This is magical. I'm loving it. Thank you, Flo. Oh, go on. Finish, Keith. What?
No, I was just going to say, download Merlin and it'll.
I've got another one, but everyone keeps telling me to use Merlin as well. Experiment. Flo, thank you very much. The jokes are still coming. Timothy says, I've also seen the Guinness bird in the wild, James. See? Two can play at that game. And David, well played, because I read it twice before I saw the joke here. He says, I like bird watching. Because it's cheap. Matt Hewitt has your headlines.
A man has appeared in court charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green. Essa Suleiman, who's 45, has been remanded in custody and will be back in court on May the 15th. A 49-year-old woman has been charged with causing the death of two 8-year-old girls in South London. Claire Fremantle denies dangerous driving after a car crashed into a primary school in Wimbledon in 2023. And the Housing Secretary's told LBC he's calling time on England's rogue landlords and giving tenants the security of a home they can count on as the Renters' Rights Act has kicked in. Landlords groups are concerned the court system's not ready for the abolition of no-fault evictions. LBC weather, warm and sunny for most of the UK. Some showers for central and eastern Scotland, northwestern England and Wales. A high of 24 degrees.
This is LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wet suit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Save even more this weekend with bank holiday offers in the Furniture Village sale. We've added new offers on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Bank holiday offers end Monday at Furniture Village, an award-winning family business.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
Anyone seeing a lesser white-fronted goose is going straight to the top of the charts. But see, this isn't much use to me. Eleanor's given me a list of about 1,000 birds ranked in rareness order, but I can't go through all of them looking for the red start, the short-eared owl, the Eurasian Gordon Oriole and the Indian roller bird, can I? What I have got for you, though, and this is almost like bird watching, I have found one of the stupidest people ever to get into Idiot's Corner. This is actually spectacular, and that reminded me that I've got a brilliant unhinged headline for you as well. Sometimes I really, really want to share the full name of the person that's WhatsApped me, because they deserve so much more shame than can be conveyed simply with a first name. But I don't think we're allowed to do that anymore, so I won't. This is from Paul. Ha ha, he writes, chatting bird watching because the left can't defend what happened this week. Green Party and a terror attack. You must be sweating, writes Paul. I mean, what was it, 2 hours yesterday on the situation, the hideous anti-Semitic attacks in Golders Green, an hour this morning on the idiocy of Zach Polanski's intervention, followed by an hour on the question of hate marches. But yeah, you got me there, Paul. That's me sweating and not talking about stuff. What an absolute prune you must be. Did you not check? Or listen? Or did you actually not? No, oh, it's worse than that. You actually listened to it but didn't notice, didn't you? Anyway, don't worry, because you've got a little bit of competition for Clown of the Week from the author of this week's, or today's at least, unhinged headline.
Unhinged headline.
I even inflicted on your behalf the misery of reading a bit of this article in the Telegraph today, because I thought it's going to be tongue-in-cheek, right? And it's not. So the headline is, Miliband hates tumble dryers. He must hate women. No, worse, mothers. Miliband hates tumble dryers. He must hate mothers too. This with regard to legislation that is always a little bit easier to understand than these people pretend. Certain types of tumble dryer will no longer be on sale in this country, but you'll still be able to buy tumble dryers. But don't let that stand in the way of an unhinged headline. Miliband hates tumble dryers. He must hate mothers too. I wonder if there were any unhinged headlines around when they brought in the smoking ban. The government hates tobacco. They must hate children too, or something. But anyway, that is an absolute doozy. That is such a peach of a piece. And it is entirely straight-faced, well, quite po-faced, in fact, and not remotely tongue-in-cheek. Ed Miliband hates women. He must do. Why else would Labour's green dictator go to war on a mother's most prized possession, her tumble dryer? I'll leave that one with you.
Unhinged headline.
And back to the bird watching. Elaine is in Peebles on the Scottish borders. Elaine, question or answer? Oh, hang on. I've gone D-Mob happy. Elaine, I've gone D-Mob happy because I'm having a long weekend off and I thought it was mystery hour because I'm in that and I just said question or answer. I've never done that before. No wonder you got confused. Elaine, what would you like to say?
Well, I was a bit confused, actually.
You and me both, so, Elaine.
So, actually, I want to be really factual. I've just left Peebles and I'm actually heading for the Scottish Highlands and I just heard that you've been up.
Are you on the road? You're on the road that I was on.
I came off because you stirred me so much. So what beautiful. I want to say to you is, I actually grew up in East Africa. I was in Uganda for many, many years when I was very little. So I've always loved wildlife, but I never quite got into the whole bird thing. And I tell you what happened was, I was walking about 4 years ago down the Tweed, which is well known for its fish. And all of a sudden there was this sort of streak of what was almost turquoise lightning, and I thought, what is that? And being a curious soul, I then waded into the water with my golden retrievers, and sure enough, there did I see two lovely little kingfishers sharing a fish.
How utterly beautiful.
That has got to be the beginning for me. So I then decided to pick up a paints, and I started drawing, which I never thought I could do. And from that moment on, I have downloaded apps, so I now can listen like you did. So I get this kind of cacophony of different birds. And then I think, well, I want to now try and decipher. So I open up my windows every night and I get the dawn morning and I get the sort of chatter at night. And I'm now told that birds do so many things with their songs and their rhymes. In other words, they stimulate the flowers to open their petals. And the world has just opened up for me. Not that it wasn't before.
No, clearly.
But I can honestly tell you that the whole... just the joy of seeing these little, almost just things of beauty that are beyond belief, and also just their antics, and they can be quite comical. So my funny bird that I came across when I was in Italy, because I do a lot of hill walking in Tuscany, was a whoopee bird.
That's a real one, is it?
That is a whoopee bird. Actually bounces along like a magpie. But has, I think one of your researchers looked it up. And then, lo and behold, there it was, up in that lovely part of the world, Glen Affric. And where did I see a whoopee bird while I was looking for pine martins? So, to anybody, I would say...
So the whoopee bird is in the domestic league and the international league?
It is indeed.
Wow.
So it's doing its rounds. So, along with everything else, and of course, bearing in mind I'm Scottish... you have all those lovely ptarmigans and different types of pheasants.
Yes,
so
of course.
Birds really, you know, they're a delight. They're just beautiful. And like any other creature, I think when you get into it, it's just, that's it, you're done.
You have made, I mean, actually you and Flo, everybody's been brilliant, but you and Flo have been lyrical in your contributions to this programme. You've been actually lyrical. And that is exactly what I tried to convey to Keith's confusion 39 minutes ago.
That
this radio is having the same effect on people that the actual process of birdwatching has. It's spreading peace and lyricism.
Could I also say to you, I worked with the BBC, and I know maybe it's a bad word now, but I did children's programmes many years ago, and I always remember, I never wanted to go into TV because I always felt that the medium of the radio is such that you've got to work harder to create the picture. Do you know what I mean?
Finally someone gets it. Thank you.
And what
you're not wrong.
So with your whether it's your tone or your enthusiasm, for me, so when I've gone and I've seen a bird or somebody's looking over my shoulder, they stop to watch. My whole family's taken in with it. I mean, once upon a time, they would have probably said bird watching is slightly mad. It's that kind of person. It's the people that sort of draw back the curtains. Not at all.
No.
So I've actually got nearly everybody that I know, and I've got a wide circle of friends, would never say that of me. I think it's because
glorious.
When you add all the other aspects to it,
it does make you feel that it's worthwhile being alive when you see what's going on around about you and you open up your eyes.
That is it. Yes, I mean, it does. It does fills you with a joy, a joy
and
de vivre.
And a peace. Yes. And the peace. And if you were in the Highlands, and I'm sure you're when you were talking about the sea, what with the sea eagles, was it?
Three of them.
I think when you just stand in that moment, and that's that mindfulness moment, and you actually realise that you are coexisting, and I think that's what makes it all worthwhile, and that's actually the essence of everything, really.
And a little bit of your own insignificance in the great scheme of things. The world will turn, it will come before, it
Absolutely.
Will be there when we've gone, and it kind of, if you're stressed and worrying about things that aren't actually that stressful, it can really take you out
exactly.
of yourself as
and
well.
And it's a reminder, it? And I tell you something, I do a little bit of work with sort of rewilding and wild Oceania, and you know, the thing that comes out of it, and a lot of young people and are heading that way, because I think sometimes they're done with the crap that's being churned out you know, everywhere around them.
Yes.
And what they see, it's almost like we call it is taking people into, say, an environment to plant a tree, for
yes.
instance, because my
yes.
great friend runs Trees for Life, and he decided after 30 years I'm going to plant 1 million trees, and that is what he did. He now says that taking the youngsters from the inner cities to a place where they can see the birds, where they can touch the soil, is better than Prozac.
I can believe it, actually, touching the soil connection. I mean, it is on the list of things that are absolutely brilliant for your mental health. And if 750,000 16 to 29-year-olds have discovered that for themselves, then we can only celebrate, actually. Before you go, how do you spell whoopee?
Whoopee, I think, I don't know whether it's Woopi, but I think your researcher found it out.
Okay.
Lovely sweet bird and very cheeky.
Uh-huh. 12:43 is the time. Thank you for that. This is absolutely glorious. See, Bruce, I told you, didn't I? I was very sceptical, he writes, but this is a really lovely phone-in. Quite a lot of messages like that. In fact, I'm getting a little bit too many to keep up, but we can see that we're touching parts. We won't be doing it on a regular basis. That would be a little bit strange, but we will be enjoying it while it lasts. Thank you to Elaine, staying, actually, in Scotland, to Evan, who's in Dumfries. Evan, what would you like to say?
So I particularly wanted to kind of bring the angle for tiny children for bird watching. So I've got a 3-year-old daughter, and bird watching, and perhaps why it's generally more accessible for young people as well, is it's portable and free and requires no equipment. You don't even need to understand or have any knowledge of the birds. Like, she's 3 and she doesn't really understand what the birds are doing or who they are or what species they are. But she can spot them and she takes real joy in seeing that. If we're walking through the woods, you know, it builds that awareness and interaction with nature as a living thing that we're part of. And she'll hold her hand up and shush me and say, "Dad, can you hear that?" And point out the bird, or hear that, you know, you'll hear that kind of football rattle sound of a woodpecker, and then we can creep through and try and see if we can find the tree that it's on. We've got little feeders in the window. I'm sitting watching the birds just out the window just now while I'm
talking. Stuck a feeder on my window, and I got a flipping pigeon. I had to take it off again. It was too big trying to get it head into the sea. But they're a lovely invention, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They really are. Have you got any entrants for my league?
I do. It's not globally not particularly rare, but in the UK, the rarest owl is the long-eared owl, I believe. And I helped rescue one of those from a tree.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, surely it wanted to be in the tree.
Well, it didn't, because it was the middle of the day and it was caught in a piece of fishing line that somebody had left stuck in the tree.
You rescued it from fishing line. You didn't rescue it from a tree. Sorry, I'm being pedantic. How completely have you just defeated Flo with her short-eared owl?
I don't know. I'm not a particular expert in owls, but a few weeks after that, I did speak to a guy from the RSPB who was, he said, "I can't believe that, because I've actually never seen one of those, and I'd love to see one."
Gorgeous. Do short-eared owls grow up to be long-eared owls? Sorry. I'm sorry. That was a rubbish joke, wasn't it?
That's going down the Pokemon route.
I agree with you. That what a lovely stuff. And there's no way, he says, from the perspective of having daughters who are both over 18 now, would you believe? There's no way you can guarantee it or influence it, but I hope that stays with her. I really do. I hope it stays for life, even if she takes a few years off when she gets into teenage matters, that closeness to nature is such a wonderful gift for a parent to give to a child. That awareness of it. Sometimes you're out with people and they just see things that you don't see. I was walking not far from where, I think it was Flo in Brighton. I was walking near Lewis the other day, about 3 months ago, and I was with someone who just had attuned in a way that I wasn't, and you just spot things. And I'm getting better, so hares are a really good example. I know that's not a bird, Keith. But also owls. So I spend a lot of time, or I used to spend a lot of time in North Norfolk, and there's some of the birds there, not just at night either. Occasionally you'd see a bird on a gate, well, at dusk. So you get into the habit of your eyes spotting these things, and everything changes. 12:46 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
When is it okay to kick a man in the head? The Met says the answer is 2 days ago in Golders Green. Banksy's ex-manager on the artist's latest statue, and Professor Green talks mental health and the manosphere.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep on going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota Electrified Saving. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from $299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
Ready for a new kitchen? Find the one at Wix. With kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. Visit Wix today.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
Okay, here's a game. I've got a guest on the show next week that is not, I mean, it hasn't been a very hard get. I got a message off a mate who, I mean, he's a broadcaster, actually, you know him. And he said, another friend of his, not of mine, has written a book about so-and-so. Do you want to get him on? And I'm like, yeah, you know I do. So the reason he'd sent me that message was because he had heard me wax lyrical on this programme about this character. The star of one of the best things that has ever happened on a news-based programme. That's your clue. Someone who I think of... You remember that little meme that went around last year, asking men why they think about the Roman Empire so much? I think about this guy in the way that other men think about the Roman Empire. It was a moment of such absolute beauty that when I'm feeling a bit down in the dumps and I can't get my hands on my binoculars to go bird watching, I will watch again and again the clip of this guy appearing on a news programme, and it never fails to bring me joy. And I want you, before 1 o'clock today, to guess who I'm talking about, and I will confirm or deny your suggestions, because I think you're going to be able to work it out, and I think you might even be as excited as I am about the idea of him coming in the studio to tell us more. Because the last time I checked, He disappeared. No one knew where he was. It was as if he'd been lost track of. But he has been tracked down. I'm not going to tell you the author's name either yet, because then you might look it up and work out. So who do you think it is? And I wonder if anybody... I almost said, does anybody love me enough to know who that I'm talking about? But that's not quite... I mean, do you love the programme enough? I've already got one. Well played, Matt. Matt has got in there already with the correct answer. How many correct answers will we get before I actually reveal the guest about whom I am ridiculously excited? But before that, the birds. The birds, the birds. Anna is in Oxford. Anna, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, hi, James.
Hello.
I wanted to talk about... So for the last 6 months, I've been really in a bad way, depression-wise. Anxious and really just wanted to just not be here, basically.
Yes,
and
sorry.
My partner's daughter moved out to Costa Rica to work in a guest house in the jungle. And we decided we wanted to go and support her and visit her. Support her. I did want to support her, but also visit, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, hardship. But I did start to get actually really quite anxious about it, and it became quite a big thing. Anyway, we went. I mean, really right out in the jungle. I mean, right out in a sort of corrugated tin hut, you know, with snakes on the path and everything like that. And Josie works with a guide who's been working there for 55 years, lived in the jungle since a child.
Yes.
And this man, he could just find anything, like a tree frog. He could hear them, and he would find them. He would just go there and find them, and we saw so much nature.
An actual spotter, as it were.
They're
perfect people to go on these tours with, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we found everything. Tapirs, we had to trek to find them, and dart frogs, everything.
Wow.
Anyway, and the snakes, which are poisonous, which you can't see, but he could always find them. But particularly the bird... So we were driving along, and he could spot from a massive, massive tree right up something called, colloquially, a stick bird, which is actually called a potu, P-O-T-O-O.
Yeah.
And this is the second time in 55 years he'd ever seen this bird. The second time. And, I mean, how he saw it, I do not know, because even with the binoculars, it was like, what? And eventually you could just about see. So the reason it's called a stick bird is because it lies vertically, actually on the trunk rather than horizontally, and of course it's coloured exactly like the trunk. So how he
saw
it is
probably the hardest bird in the world to spot.
Yeah,
it's literally. I mean, it's camouflage, isn't it? It's
completely.
It's a funny looking fella, isn't it? It's a funny looking fella as well. You wouldn't even know it was a bird until it opened its mouth. You'd think it was a stick.
And it's a bit like a whale shark. It opens its mouth and just sort of lets the insects come into it.
Yeah.
No effort. Yeah, but it only does that during night, so you'll never see it during the day.
Oh.
But obviously it was fast asleep.
How excited was the guide?
I mean, he just couldn't believe it, and my partner's daughter was just amazed. You know, it was so exciting. He got out his big kind of telescope thing, and we were taking a photo of looking at it, going, "Is it really?" You can see it's a bird, but it's really, really.
And that's contagious, right? That excitement is utterly contagious.
Absolutely amazing,
yeah.
And the whole. And so we were there for about 2 weeks, and the effect it had on my mental health was absolutely. I just felt.
I can hear it. I can hear it in your voice.
I mean, I completely and utterly got Trump derangement syndrome, and every second I'm looking at blue sky. What's Trump done? What's Trump done? And obviously we didn't have much internet access.
Perfect.
It was just like, I'm just away from, I know what's going on, but it was like, I'm not totally absorbed in it. I'm absorbed in something that's much more.
That is absolutely beautiful. And has it sustained? Are you going to be able to carry this forward now that you're back in Oxford?
I hope so. And
I hope
so far,
too.
So good.
I bet
so
you
far.
Are. I bet you are.
So
well, yeah, and there'll be other things. You might not see a stick bird, but there'll be other things that can take you to that place that the stick bird took you to. It is like opening a door. It's like living in a building and not knowing that there's a room in it. When you find a hobby like this, or you find an enthusiasm like this, it can be the most transporting thing. Thank you, Anna. That was lovely, wasn't it? That was really lovely. I'd love to see a stick bird. I've got a really good full disclosure for you this week. I think it's right up there with the best. It's with a woman called Emma Greed, and I think I opened it by saying you are someone about whom my listeners will either know everything or nothing. Emma was born in Plaistow in East London, and she is now one of the most successful entrepreneurs around, particularly or especially in the fashion industry. She is a sort of partner and co-founder with various members of the Kardashian family, of the denim company Good American and the company Skims as well. But her journey is extraordinary. Extraordinary. Plasto, single mother, a bit later in the story, a Jamaican stepfather. So she's mixed race. She's old school working class. She's from East London and she has conquered America. And it's an incredible story. And here's a tiny bit of it.
It's what's interesting, isn't it? You didn't have a really clear idea of where you wanted to be.
No,
but you,
I didn't know what
but
the
you
jobs
zoned
were.
In on it by shedding all the things that you worked out
it's
you
a
didn't want to be.
Process of elimination. I didn't know what the
and
jobs
how much
were.
Rejection? How much was elimination and how much was rejection?
Oh my God, sometimes you would go to places and they'd be like, there's nothing for you to do here. And I was like, but guys, I'm working for free. I need you to give me a try.
I need to show you what I can do.
Sometimes I would leave. I remember there was a couple of them where I was just like, what is happening? I can't, like, do nothing. You know, they put you in a cupboard and I'd be like, well, there's no exposure, no nothing. And so you just get out of there.
What's
but
the
other
point?
Times they'd absolutely rinse you. Do you know what I mean? You'd be there till 11 p.m.
And that's what you preferred.
I was like, let's just go for it.
What?
I was happy to be taken advantage of, if I'm really honest, because I was like, this is all for me. I was like, who is this for? It's just for me.
And you believed that it was going to lead somewhere. Some people get downcast in those sort of situations because they can't see where it's going to lead, but you were moving around so much.
But that's your job, you know. Your job is to have the vision to see what it's going to do.
Yeah, but not everybody gets that.
No, but I really got it.
How many letters do you think you sent? Or
oh, definitely more than 100.
Just literally everything that sounded vaguely feasible for you.
Every single thing, you know. In
can
in
I come
these
and have a go? Can
yeah,
I come and have a
every,
go?
Every single. I went down back in those days. You know, London Fashion Week had a schedule. I wrote to every single person. I wrote to every single PR agency. I wrote to every single buyer. I wrote to every single shop on the high street. I went, you know, London College of Fashion is just off of Oxford Street.
Yeah.
So I went down Oxford Street. I made a list of every store starting from Selfridges, obviously high aspirations, all the way to BHS, whatever we can get. And so I just went down and I remember like Sir Philip Green. This is how much audacity I had.
Yeah.
Sir Philip Green was like a patron or something. Maybe he's not a sir anymore, but anyway, different conversation for a different time. But I remember he came and did a college visit and I gave him my resume and
yeah.
he went... Oh, I love, and he could have handed it to someone. And I remember thinking, you're lost.
Yeah,
like,
more for you.
You're nuts. I was like, I would kill it at Topshop.
I would kill it at Topshop. Seriously, I didn't know a great deal about her. My producer, the podcast producer, Anya, was adamant that I absolutely had to talk to her. And within about 10 minutes of that conversation starting, I was transported. She's inspirational and wonderful, and you need to listen to Full Disclosure this week. There's a couple of other absolute crackers in the pipeline as well. I've had quite a busy week. But next week, yes, you're right, some of you have got it. Joseph writes, is it the cat's taxi driver? Dan says, oh my God, it's Guy Gomer. Quite a few of you, but probably actually quite a few of you guessed it correctly. It is Guy Gomer. And if you don't know who he is, just Google it now and thank me later. Guy Gomer, G-O-M-A. Probably the finest thing that's ever happened on television, including the time that elephant did a poo on Blue Peter. Elliot Gotkin is the author, and they'll both be joining me one day next week. We haven't decided which one yet. That's it from me for another week.
Strangely, that is straight where my mind went to, the elephant on Blue Peter.
It's our age, isn't it? It must be our generational moment.
Or we've just got an interest in scatological humour.
Or elephants. Or elephants. Could be that. Next week on the show, elephant spotting and how it changed my life. If you missed any of this show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. So do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Fogarty. It makes me sound quite funky. Coming up throughout the afternoon, we're going to be talking to, amongst others, Banksy's ex-manager. The artist has plonked something else in our midst and people are going crazy for it. We'll talk to him about that. Professor Green talks to me at 3 on mental health, fatherhood and the manosphere. We'll talk, of course, about the changes to the rental rights that you have. But I'm going to start with, again, the situation around Golders Green. Simple question, when is it okay to kick a man in the head? Zach Polanski of the Green Party and others say the Met went too far. The Met says the answer is essentially 2 days ago in Golders Green is when it's okay to kick a man in the head. I agree with them. Andy Hughes will join me to say what police tactics are in those circumstances.
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. A man has appeared in court charged with attempted murder after two Jewish men were stabbed in Golders Green. Essa Suleiman, who's 45, has been remanded in custody and will be back in court in a fortnight. The UK's terror threat level was upgraded from substantial to severe for the first time in more than 4 years yesterday. Lib Dem MP Mike Martin has told LBC highly visible policing is needed as an immediate step.
The general climate of fear around the Jewish community is abhorrent. We need really high, visible policing in places like Golders Green, where there are concentrated areas of Jewish community, as an immediate step. And then we need to look much more in the longer term about how we affect some of those cultural narratives and some of that perhaps acquiescence or acceptance.
A woman has been charged with causing the death of 2 8-year-old girls in South London. A car drove into a primary school in Wimbledon in 2023. LBC's Helen Hoddinott has more.
49-year-old Claire Freemantle is accused of 2 counts of causing death by dangerous driving and 7 counts of causing serious injury by dangerous driving following the incident at the Study Prep School in Wimbledon in July 2023.
Her lawyers say she'll plead not guilty. The co-founder of clothing firm Superdry has been found guilty of raping a woman after a night out drinking. 54-year-old James Holder had claimed any sexual activity was consensual. The Housing Secretary, Steve Reed, told LBC he's calling time on England's rogue landlords and giving tenants the security and dignity of a home they can count on as the Renters' Rights Act has kicked in. Landlords groups are concerned the court system's not ready for the abolition of no-fault evictions. You can read the Housing Secretary's exclusive piece on the LBC app. And a Second World War bomb discovered on a building site in Plymouth has been detonated in a controlled explosion. It was packed with 400 tons of sand to ensure as little damage as possible. A 400-metre cordon was in place around the scene. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 54 points at 10.323. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.16. LBC weather, warm and sunny for most of the UK. Some showers for central and eastern Scotland, northwestern England and Wales. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
Pam, what on earth has happened to your eye?
I don't know. I looked online, but then
well, for what it's worth, to me it looks like what my gran said her old neighbour Queenie had. Her eyes went every colour of the rainbow. Had to bathe them in warm carrot juice every day for a year. You could give that a try.
It's best to get a gammy eye checked by an expert. That's why Specsavers can help treat eye problems in every store. Should have gone to
unwanted advice.
Savers. Conditions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. A strange question to you, but when do you think it's okay for a police officer to kick a man in the head? I asked that question because of what Zach Polanski, the leader of the Green Party, reposted on X and the Ferrari, the row, the discussion, combination of all of the above that has prompted. The post that he retweeted said, essentially, I'm quoting now, essentially his officers were repeatedly and violently kicking a mentally ill man in the head when he was already incapacitated by taser. Now, the Met Police Commissioner has been speaking to Nick Ferrari here on LBC about his defence of his officers arresting a suspect in the Golders Green attack on Wednesday. Sir Mark Rowley criticised a social media post by Green Party leader Zach Polanski.
I'm not interested in politics, but if somebody eminent rather than some of the oddballs on social media. If someone eminent says something or does something which I see has a risk to undermining the confidence of my officers to act, because they need that sense of public support, then I need to intervene on that, and that's what I did with that letter. Can you imagine being in that situation without a firearm? It is the most extraordinary bit of policing, and I need officers to see that they are going to get my support and public support for that. And that's interesting, the correspondence with Zach Polanski, that the support it's received online from the wider community is really heartwarming for officers to see.
Is Mr. Polanski being ignorant, rabble-rousing? What's he doing?
So that's for others to talk about that. I'm just dealing with the confidence of my officers to protect the public.
Well, the victims minister, Alex Davis-Jones, responded to Zach Polanski's tweet on Nick Ferrari at breakfast again on LBC.
I was deeply alarmed by the comments of Zach Polanski and others yesterday and in the past few days regarding the attacks. Those brave officers of the Met Police ran towards danger. They seek to serve our communities and they deserve all of our support in an incredibly difficult job. And anyone seeking to undermine that is wrong, quite frankly. And I support Sir Mark in his efforts to try to prevent this division wherever it's occurring, even in political parties, as we've seen.
Well, speaking on Ian Dale's programme last night on LBC, the Green Party leader in Wales, Anthony Slaughter, distanced himself from Zach Polanski's comments.
To come back to the question about Zach, yes, I was made aware of this on my way here just shortly beforehand. I haven't seen the tweet. I understand, as you say, at the end that Zach retweeted a tweet, but it does seem, from what I've read, was inappropriate to retweet. I know that Zach and his other colleagues in the London Assembly do work closely with the Met Police, so there will be discussions afterwards to see what went wrong, how this can be better handled in future. It's also the scourge of social media when news is coming at you and bombarding, and people, it took me a long time to train myself not to send tech tweets or put those comments on social media.
Some of us still haven't trained us.
But I can't speak to Zach, I haven't spoken to him since.
But what, there is an accusation that all of the anti-Semites who used to infest the far left of the Labour Party have now joined the Green Party, and you seem quite happy, or your party seems quite happy to accept them.
Absolutely no tolerance for any anti-Semitic behaviour, any Islamophobic behaviour. It's notable that it's Labour politicians saying that's happened. I haven't seen much evidence of it. We have had no complaints of anti-Semitic behaviour or Islamophobic behaviour in Wales regarding members and candidates. Stories do come out. You know, political parties reflect society. Society, unfortunately, does have racism at its heart, but it is not tolerated in Green Party. We have robust disciplinary procedures of which, as leadership, leadership members, leadership team, we play no part in. But I can't be more clear. There is no place for it in our party.
That was Anthony Slaughter speaking to Ian Dale yesterday on LBC. We have invited the Greens to put someone up to speak to us about this, but they haven't taken us up on that offer yet. Andy Hughes joins me, LBC's crime correspondent and co-host of Global's podcast, The Crime Agents. Now, Andy, you know, police tactics and the rules around contact with another human being are very mobile, aren't they? Because it depends on the human being and it depends on the situation that you are in and the level of threat posed to either the officer or members of the public. It's a movable feast, this, isn't it?
It is indeed, Sheila. Police officers are told they need to be like an elastic band and adapt to their situations. What you saw in that video of the officers kicking the suspect in the head, it obviously attracted a lot of attention. It attracted a lot of support. It also attracted a lot of criticism. But what you saw in that video is entirely in accordance with their training. Officers are trained to use whatever force they deem as necessary, especially when they fear their life is in danger. And officers are allowed to use their feet in that way. For a couple of occasions. The first one is if they fear their life is in danger. The second one is if their hands are otherwise engaged. And as you saw in that video, one of the officers was holding a taser. The other officer